Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Step right up. You will be amazed. You will be horrified. You will be sickened. You will be a number of things that I cannot even give breath to the words for what you will be. For it is, lo and behold, Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You can't tell the Morans without a program. The program is free each and every night. But especially on Moran Monday, here behind this thin veil of canvas, which you cannot see, but which you can vividly imagine via the magic of radio, I have for your delectation, for your sensory overload, I have Morans, right-wing Morans, repig-licking Morans. Come right up. Step right up. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. It's Moran Monday on the horn, and you have no idea what awaits you inside. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Moran Monday is on the horn right now. Hallelujah. Come right up. Step right up. Come away from the ring toss. Come away. You don't want that little goldfish. Quit throwing those ping pong balls. Come over here right now. See the Morans. See the right-wing freaks in their natural habitat. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Welcome to Moran Monday. I'm Bob. A new week begins on the horn. And I'd have to say it's a very, very special Moran Monday here, because it's not very often that an emeritus Moran comes up out of the woodwork, sneaks out from behind the baseboards to make a sort of return engagement. That's right, I offer you none other than, oh my God, I thought that freak was dead, David Duke. Yeah, he must be hard up for cash or something, because he's got a video out right now that, I guess, tries to, what, coattail the Tea Partiers? But in best Barker fashion, you must hear this to believe it. It will defy your comprehension. David Duke explaining what's good about the tea baggers. Yeah. So, there's nothing wrong with the tea baggers. I love it. I love it when people like Duke do this, because you know that there, to the extent that there is a group of baggers who consider themselves normal, having David Duke come out and say, no, they're just like us. There's got to, well, Dick Armey and that filthy crowd over at Freedom Works has to sort of, you know, it's got to be one of those moments where, well, you know, one of these days we'll do video, but it looks a little like this. Elbow on, elbows on desk. Palms forming a sort of concave resting place where the forehead goes. And it's generally accompanied by, no. Noises like that. And those are the noises they're making at Freedom Works right now because of what David Duke has released. But never mind me telling you about what David Duke has said. This is radio. You can hear David Duke say it in his own weird-ass Nazi Klansman voice. So I give you David Duke.
This is David Duke, and I want to thank you for daring to listen to the most censored person in America.
Oh, by the way, that's Dr. David Duke. Dr. David Duke. Somehow I don't think he'll be showing up on any TV shows or Dr. Duke, Dr. Oz. No. I got a feeling David Duke couldn't put a Band-Aid on without, well, first of all, the Band-Aids are probably the wrong color to suit him because whoever decided that was flesh tone. I don't know what planet they lived on, but I got a feeling that Stephen Hawking was pretty good and did a good thing by warning us about them. But anyway, yes, you are listening to the most censored man in the world. No, just the dumbest one.
Indeed, Tea Party movement supporters, those who favor less government power and more individual freedom, are overwhelmingly white and non-Jewish. A strong majority of white people voted against Barack Obama and theoretically against bigger government. But even
that's right. It's only because we've given the vote to those people with that darker skin that we've got that one in the White House. An overwhelming majority of white people. This thing's 7 minutes long. This may take some work, okay? So just like I said, this is truly a Moran Monday emeritus offering. I think we may have to, we may just have to award this to the guy straight out, even though there are clearly other contestants this evening.
Larger percentages of blacks, Mexicans, and Jews voted for Obama. Whites in Louisiana were called racist because over 65% voted for me to be their U.S. senator, but nobody called a 99% black vote for a black for president as racist. Now that's hypocrisy. Jewish-dominated media and Jewish financial institutions on Wall Street, such as Goldman Sachs, also supported Obama. In fact, Goldman Sachs was his biggest corporate contributor. European-American people held this...
European-American people. I thought that's what we said to the right wing, to the Bush administration. European on the American people! Because they did that for 8 years, but, you know, who the heck am I?
Historic Tea Party in Boston, and they're the heart and soul of the modern version. A good friend of mine attended the Tea Party rally on the Mall in Washington, D.C.
Now see, there he's lying. He doesn't have any good friends. But then again, you remember the Friday program where we started out with that crazed freak from Nicaragua who was screaming and off, threatening to stab a reporter with a camera. He was going to stab him with his little American flag spiky pointed thing and throw him in the Potomac River. I got to think that the presence of that individual can't be very encouraging to David Duke. But never, since when does the logic, reason, common sense get in the way of David Duke?
A million people turned out.
No, they didn't.
Commentator said that Washington looked the whitest it's looked in 100 years. The usual suspects, though, are already trying to control the movement. So the self-appointed rally leaders put a whole rainbow of blacks and other races on the stage to promote an image of liberal diversity. My friend who attended...
Wow, wait a minute. Do I have that right? Did I just hear that right? Is David Duke complaining because the teabaggers are hauling out a few tokens here and there? Why, yes. I think he is. Oh, this is delightful. Because after all, the teabaggers are formed out of the sort of tailings and remnants of the John Birch Society and the Patriot Movement and the Klan. And David Duke has never been known for his inclusiveness.
Said the guy next to him in the million-plus crowd said, quote, you know, they have more blacks on the stage than they have in the entire audience. In 1790, our forefathers passed America's first Immigration Act. It limited immigration to, quote, free white people, unquote.
Don't anybody tell David Duke, but that's not a recommendation of our forefathers. That's sort of, you know, evidence that they were bigots. What are you going to do? Morans. So many morans. So little time. Well, we shall continue. Let's see. Let's get back to there. Yeah, there it is. Free white people.
Oh, ironically, the propaganda is so thick today that I forgive young people who think it's anti-American to want to preserve our white heritage. If I'm an American, then so are the men who created America.
Technically true. They were British subjects, but who the hell am I to quibble?
Thomas Jefferson, the man who wrote our Declaration of Independence, opposed slavery for two reasons. He thought it morally repugnant, and he saw it as a huge danger to our posterity. He went so far as to say that unless American slaves were repatriated to their motherland, that he, quote, shuddered for...
Yeah, you know, their motherland, the country of Africa. It almost looks like... Because David Duke's a white guy and everything, but I swear, looking at these images of him, it almost looks like he's had further skin bleaching. This guy is not looking well. But, well.
America's future. Jefferson's writings have been completely censored in the popular media, much like mine.
They've been censored in the popular media, just like David Duke's. Really? Because I can go on the Google just about any time, and I can pull up just about everything that Thomas Jefferson ever wrote. Now, granted, if you, for instance, have your own copy of Reckoning at Eagle Creek by our good friend Jeff Biggers, you will find a reference therein to the fact that Thomas Jefferson was all in favor of a scam or a scheme whereby native persons living upon this continent would be swindled out of their ancestral lands through the application of what? Yes, that's right, debt. Well, that and liquor and disease. But yeah, Thomas Jefferson was all in favor of that, I'm not aware of anything suggesting that that was censored information that Jeff had to sneak out of a library one night under cover of darkness. It's just not known. It isn't taught in our schools. But if the trade out that I have to make that Thomas Jefferson isn't taught, and therefore David Duke isn't taught, I don't really think that there's a comparison between the two or any sort of causal link, but I'm more than willing to make that trade. I think.
Writings inscribed in the Jefferson Memorial show just how much we've been lied to. It reads, quote, "Commerce between master and slave is despotism. Nothing is more certainly written in the book of fate than that these people are to be free. Establish the law for educating the common people." Well, it's a big lie. It's bogus. It censors what he actually said. Quote, "Nothing is more certainly written in the book of fate than that these people are to be free. Nor is it less certain that the two races, equally free, cannot live in the same government. Nature, habit, opinion have drawn indelible lines of distinction between them."
Now, see, that goes to show that Thomas Jefferson, it doesn't show that he's been censored. It goes to show that Thomas Jefferson, although a product of what is routinely referred to as the Enlightenment, was not fully enlightened. You see, he saw people from the continent of Africa as being literally a different species from people, as opposed to people from the continent of Europe. Truly, truly. It was that sort of thinking that, among others, Charles Darwin, some 50, 60, 70 years later, would campaign against. It was part of his argument for the origin of the species that we all have a common ancestor, which science, which no one can ever accuse David Duke of having even so much as a passing familiarity with, which science now proves as true. We have a common ancestor. That common ancestor arose on the African continent, you know what, 2.5, 3 million years ago, I forget, Australopithecus afarensis, you know, Lucy, that... We know that. And the fact that we know that is part of what drives the David Dukes of the world so moronically crazier than a sprayed roach. Because he don't want to have no kinfolk, no me, not even if it's 3 million years ago. He don't want no kinfolk from Africa. I ain't got no one drop of no black blood. I'm pure white. You know how they are.
Jefferson was simply stating a fundamental truth that nations are the product of particular peoples and cultures, and that too much diversity, far from being a strength, actually leads to hatreds, violence, and war.
But who does the violence, and who does the hatred, and who does the war, Mr. Duke? The white people! Tell me, is it just me, or... Was that largely a contest between white armies in that little dust-up between 1860 and 1865? Or, you know, generally, how about all the bloodshed all over Western Europe started by that little 5-foot twit of a Corsican, Napoleon? Now, I forget where I read it the other day, but I saw an interesting line that... some apologist right-winger was out there saying, God bless George Bush because he kept us safe. And the writer said, well, that's true as long as you don't count 9/11, which is sort of like saying Napoleon never lost a battle if you don't count Waterloo. But who's done all that? I mean, yes, other ethnicities, other peoples have certainly made war upon each other and other peoples, and they have engaged in tremendous slaughter. That is not the point. But the idea that diversity leads to bloodshed, that's simply an unsupported conclusion that this old rotten-brained piece of human rubbish, David Duke, offers up. Well, I guess because he felt like he wasn't getting enough love out there.
Diversity, no matter how idealized, does not bring love and brotherhood. It brings the exact opposite, hatred and disunity.
But who's preaching the hatred and disunity? Oh, sorry. That would be Mr. Duke and his ilk again. But I'm sitting here fooling around with logic. When this mind is clearly in the clutches of tertiary syphilis or something like that, that has caused little worm-like things to crawl around inside his skull and eat the matter of his brain, which was not in the best shape in the first place.
Up until the 1960s, America was an overwhelmingly 90% European American nation.
And what does he use? Oh, I'm sorry you can't see this video, friends and neighbors. What does he use to prove that America was an overwhelmingly white nation? Yeah, you got it.
Hey, Beav, what happened?
But it's true.
Yeah, leave it to Beaver footage. You know, from Hollywood, that's run by all those Jews that Mr. Duke doesn't like. Oh, irony, irony, how I adore thee, irony. This man has just used television footage as proof of social reality. See, the thing is, 50s television, as you well know, it didn't reflect what the culture was. It did not reflect the reality of all of the people that were being ignored. My God, how long did we have to wait for the first interracial kiss on a science fiction program about a culture 500 years from now in which a white man and a black woman were forced to kiss not of their own free volition, but because of an overarching alien mind-controlling power? How long did we have to wait for that? What was it, 1967, 1968? And of course, Robert Culp recently passed away, and there was I Spy with him and Bill Cosby. And we had to wait a long time for that. No one can ever accuse, you know, go back to, what was it, D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation, with the heroic Klansmen riding through it. What? But suddenly, the Hollywood that Dr. Duke, God, I feel like I'm talking about some Hunter S. Thompson character, that David Duke, the Hollywood that he rails against, is suddenly his best evidence in support of a lily-white America. Wow. What a moron.
Truly anti-American power gained control over the media and politics of our country.
Oh, see, that's how it works out. Let's just back up a little here so that we won't lose the gist of what we're talking about here. Come on, here we go. I hate the way this player works.
These people are to be free. Nor is it less certain that the two races, equally free, cannot live in the same government. Nature, habit, opinion have drawn indelible lines of distinction between them. Jefferson was simply stating a fundamental truth that nations are the product of particular peoples and cultures, and that too much diversity, far from being a strength, actually leads to hatreds, violence, and war. Diversity, no matter how idealized, does not bring love and brotherhood. It brings the exact opposite, hatred and disunity. Up until the 1960s, America was an overwhelmingly 90% European-American nation.
Hey, Beef, what happened?
But a truly anti-American power gained control over the media and politics of our country.
Oh, here it comes. Yeah, that... Don't anybody go... Poor David Duke. It must be truly difficult to go through life as unutterably stupid as that man is. He is about to launch into the Jews took control of Hollywood in the 1960s. The only problem was the Jews had kind of been in Hollywood for a while, half a century or so. But why are we surprised? This freak is... He just goes through all that Thomas Jefferson stuff and the discussion of Sally Hemings was where? Because, you see, if you say on the one hand that we're talking about different species here, then Thomas Jefferson, under that rubric, was a practitioner of bestiality. On the other hand, if you acknowledge the fact that Thomas Jefferson apparently had as close to a warm and loving relationship with Sally Hemings as was possible between master and slave, then David Duke's got a different problem. And it's even knottier than the first one. So rather than deal with those inconvenient realities, we'll just sort of blow past them and start talking about them Hollywood Jews.
Its agenda was to make our people a minority in our own country. Huge efforts are being made now to twist Tea Partyism to the same agenda as the New World Order rather than the true values of our forefathers. Tea Party people are called racist because the vast majority wants to stop the massive non-European immigration.
Well, what is that massive non-European immigration? I mean, after all, what he's trying to say here is that he objects to to people who aren't as pale and sickly looking as he is, coming to America, which largely entails talking about a Latino population, most of whom have some sort of Spanish last name. You know, your Hernandezes, your Garcias, your Alvarezes. You're right. The fact of the matter is, and this is a bit of a divergence from our topic, but the fact of the matter is, the Spanish came to what was then Nueva España and freely interbred with the native populations, whereas the white Anglos and the English types, the Germans and the Dutch and the Scots-Irish later, not to as much of an extent, but certainly along the same lines, came here and simply killed them. Because anyone knows that that the Spanish don't look like Mexicans, and Mexicans don't look like the Spanish. But the blood, so to speak, is intermingled, and the whole idea of blood is stupid and practically antediluvian in the first place. You know, the one-drop rule and all of that foolishness. The non-European immigration, well, for many of those people coming across the border, they've got quite the European heritage, unless David Duke has suddenly taken out his little racist scalpel and carved the Iberian Peninsula off from Europe! See the pretzel logic involved with these baggers and these racists and these unrepentant Klansmen? They get themselves into holes, and then once they're firmly ensconced in the hole, they scream that we're the problem for not being in it with them.
That will turn America into a crumbling Tower of Babel. Most Tea Partiers believe that we in America have the right to preserve our heritage, language, and culture, just as every nation has that human right. The vast majority of Tea Party activists oppose affirmative action and diversity, which are nothing more than programs of racist discrimination against white people. The vast majority of Tea Party enthusiasts despise Hollywood and the mass media. You know, the unelected media bosses have far more power than any senator or congressman and are far more alien to America than the British were at the time of the American Revolution. At least...
With a graphic beside him. Jews run Hollywood. What?
The British were of our own Christian cultural heritage, while the non-Christian ethno-religious minority who dominates Hollywood...
Oh, no, not a photograph of Larry David! That's right, America is going to hell in a handcar because of Jewish comedians. You know, this is going to come as a complete surprise to Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com. I can't wait until he hears the podcast or whatever of this one, because it will engender something. Something delightful will fly through the cyberspace, through the series of tubes, and wind up in my email box as soon as Eugene hears that crumbling American society is the fault of Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld.
Sees itself as very distinct.
It's shrinkage, I tell you.
From the 98% rest of us. Tea Party activists are true populists who see the powers that control international finance and the Federal Reserve as the biggest threats to American prosperity and freedom. Between all-powerful, unelected mass media and special interest PACs, they see Washington politics as even more alien than our forefathers saw the London Parliament and their right.
Oh, my God. Okay. This just reinforces for me the fact that we've got to go to video, and we've got to do it in such a way that I can show you the videos that I'm running. Because you have not lived until you have seen David Duke's photoshopped picture of Hillary Clinton wearing a yarmulke. Really, you haven't lived.
Right. Seeing the Tea Party as a very dangerous European-American movement, Jewish extremists are trying to gain control over it, just like they did with the American government and media. They want Tea Party people to get on the liberal diversity bandwagon and, most importantly, support the takeover of American foreign policy by a foreign power, Israel. Real patriots know that Zionist partisans have huge power in the media, finance, and political fundraising. They see it as appalling that the most powerful lobby in Congress, AIPAC, is a lobby for a foreign government. And this lobby has been caught spying for that foreign government. Make no mistake, the same Zionists who control our media and government are at the core of the attack on our heritage, our values, our freedoms. Jewish organizations have completely led the movement for destroying our borders. We don't need our boys halfway around the world protecting the borders of Afghanistan and Iraq. We need them at home on the Mexican-American border. The biggest threat to us are not some freaks running around the desert of Pakistan. It's the freaks running the media who are destroying our values. Who's the danger to America? Who are
the Weinstein brothers. Those are the freaks to whom he's referring. Come on, David. Mr. Duke, Dr. Duke, can't you just make this worth my while and get around to going after the Coen brothers? I mean, there's nobody funnier than the Coen brothers. But under this theory, I suppose the Big Lebowski is some massive anti-American and secret indoctrination film that, if you play it backwards, says Whitey must die. I don't know. I can't. We're talking about some crazy here that I can't get my little noggin around. I just can't.
Teaching our children the sexual habits of bonobo monkeys who are giving us endless movies promoting alcohol and drug abuse.
Oh, no, not the bonobos!
We should not be fighting and dying for freedom in Afghanistan when our kids right now are not even free to sing Christmas carols in our own schools.
Right, because it's the same thing. Killing a million Iraqi civilians is the moral equivalent, or the equivalent moral failing, to not singing Silent Night because in a war on Christmas that isn't true in the first place. Where's that bottle of tequila? I may need it later. Okay.
The father of our country, George Washington, is called a racist and his name's being taken off public schools. Are we free when millions of us can't even send our kids to public schools because they're full of violence and drugs? The Tea Party movement is made up of American people who have watched in silent anger while the nation of our forefathers has been destroyed.
That's right. They want to take their country back. In fact, Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry said exactly that not too long back. Or maybe it wasn't Rick Goodhair Perry. Maybe it was some other wingnut bastard. Let's see, where is it? I can find it here. It was Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry. He said, Americans can take their country back and send a message to this administration and this Congress and I consider myself proud to be in that army. You want to be in an army, Rick Goodhair Perry? Go sign up. We've got a big one. And we've probably got a couple of holes you could plug in a unit in Afghanistan. Stand not on the order of your going, Rick Goodhair Perry, but go at once. Okay, there's not much left of this.
Tea Party movement, as the original Tea Party, is about preserving our heritage and our freedom.
I'll be damned. I thought the original Tea Party that took place in Boston, in which white people dressed up as Native Americans so as to perhaps cast blame off on them in case the thing didn't go quite right, I thought that had something to do with taxation and not preserving white heritage. But you know what? When you're a bagger, when you're a birther, when you're a deather, a tenther, a booger eater, facts don't matter. And I cannot tell you how happy I am that David Duke broke his long silence in order to share this with us. Because I just don't, I want the baggers to take ownership of David Duke, and I want David Duke to take ownership of the baggers. It's kind of like what went down back when Texas was having its constitutional amendment to protect the traditional merge, and the Klan came out in support of the amendment. If we had actually had our arm together, there would have been billboards all over Texas saying the Klan supports traditional marriage. When you vote for this, you support the Klan. But we didn't. But someday, we will. And of course, that is by no means the beginning or end of Moran Monday. I've got lots of other nominees out there. Let's see, the National Mining Association is in the race tonight. Yes, 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 yes. And what would Moran Monday be if we didn't have a Texas politician involved? We've got a nominee from Texas that isn't Rick Goodhair Perry. Oh yes, absolutely. We've got tons of little nominees just all over the place. And we've got some real news. But we've got Morans oplenty. We've got a nominee for a significant portion of the student body of a southern university. That's coming too. We've got, and who would be surprised, Morans in Alabama. They're on the nominee list. It's all a matter of what we get to. And then a few remarks as well coming up, I think, on the memorial service for the Upper Big Branch miners who were killed. The memorial service held yesterday in Beckley, at which both President Obama and Vice President Biden spoke eloquently, with one exception on President Obama's part. We'll get to that, too. But right now what we're going to do, because the last I checked, this is a conversation program and not a filibobster program. The last I checked, this is a conversation program, and we will go straightway to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra, what's up?
Oh, listen, God, that Duke. I mean, what's he smoking?
I think he's gone past smoking myself.
I mean, because that was just bizarre. When he goes off the deep end about the Jews, I mean, he was just salivating just to go there. It's so predictable and yuck. And why is he a doctor?
I don't know exactly what he's a doctor of. Nobody's really told me. I think, maybe Bob Jones University gave him an honorary doctorate or something. I don't know.
Well, listen, I have my own nominee for Moran today.
Oh, goody.
Yes, it's Skippy Gates. Remember him? That Negro who was hauled off by the police?
Yes, 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 yes.
Henry Louis Gates?
Yes.
His latest little diatribe is all about reassuring the majority that slavery happened because the darkies pretty much did it to themselves.
Huh?
So he spent his considerable intellect writing about how the African elites, sold the blacks to the European slavers, and if it hadn't have been so well organized on the African elite side, it wouldn't have transpired in such huge amounts. So.
Wow, that contradicts everything that I've ever learned about slavery. But then again, David Duke was out there to explain that, it's because of censorship.
Right, but the thing is that, it's couched in this, historical gibberish. I guess that's the acceptable discourse, but, I mean, it's so foul and it's so typical for Gates. That's his whole M.O. He's like a slavery apologist.
Those Dutch and Portuguese ships that were constantly lying at anchor off the West African coast, they were just, what, the beneficiary, Sandra, of dumb luck?
Well, just so happens that I guess the African continent was so well organized and stratified that the whites just had to sit around and the boatloads of blacks just came their way. I mean, the sort of disingenuousness of this is so gruesome. And I know you who wants to hear reading on a radio, but I just have to read this one little quote that he wrote.
Go right ahead.
Thanks to an unlikely confluence of history and genetics, the fact that he is African American and president, Barack Obama has the unique opportunity to reshape the debate over one of the most contentious issues of America's racial legacy, reparation. the idea that descendants of American slaves should receive compensation for their ancestors' unpaid labor and bondage. Hello, is there a discussion?
Well, you know, I was about to, I didn't want...
It's such a small man. Is there any discussion?
I didn't want to interrupt you or anything, Sandra, but I pay attention to some stuff, and somewhere or another, I missed out on the great reparations debate that Barack Obama started.
Exactly. I don't hear any black folks talking about reparations at all. I mean, it's a straw man, and it's just so insipid. It's so disgusting. I'm thinking, once again, wasn't this Negro being manhandled by Whitey just recently?
You know, I think there was beer drinking involved, wasn't there?
Oh, no, but it's just, see, this is the thing. This is why when that went down, I was laughing, thinking it couldn't have happened to a better Negro. This is why, this shit here, this is what he does. This is his stock in trade. But
honest to God, Sandra, what's the point?
Well, that's the other question. That's the next question. What is the point of putting pen to paper for a paper about this subject right now? I mean, are the black hordes?
Is he not? I mean, is he not getting? Is he trying to get on the staff of Talking Heads at Fox? And this is the little sharp, pointy stick that he's what?
No. This man has been, you know, stepped on the backs of blacks in this country from day one, from his days at Duke to where the hell he is now. He's always been that type of Negro, and it's just sort of the fact that. Yeah, I don't know. And you had Duke going, I thought, oh my God, this is kind of perfect because, you know, it don't stop. Okay? And I don't know,
does Henry Louis Gates not understand that David Duke would shoot him down like a dog in the street in a heartbeat? I mean, if he got that much solicitous treatment, because, you know, lynchings are the preferred, you know what I mean.
Well, no, what's happening? You already have 50 to 70% unemployment. You know, the black community is on its knees. I mean, what else do you want? You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
I'm not understanding it. You got a black person in the White House. That leaves the majority thinking, well, everything's okay in black land. So what is the point of this? You see what I'm saying? It's so disturbing. It's like, overkill, and I realize that.
It's like throwing a nickel in a clothes dryer. You know, it just creates a meaningless clank.
Yeah, well, yeah, and like you said, what is the point? And I'm assuming that maybe other people think that too, but it's just the idea that this is what going on in academia, and I'm just like, are you kidding me with this shit? So. I just think that it almost goes hand in hand with Duke, you know. He don't need to go on the radio talking that mess. We got folks doing it right there for him, as far as I can tell.
But and the insanity just goes on and on and on because I just got a note from our pal Cindy in the Great Northwest, and she said, that David Duke is going on about Jews in the owning the media. She said, I never had any idea whatsoever that Rupert Murdoch was a crazed Zionist Jew.
Ah.
But you know, what do you want when your historical precedent is clips of Leave It to Beaver? The first time I saw this, I was, you know, watching it. And then it cut to the grainy black and white footage, and I'm thinking, you know, this is maybe some sort of documentary. And then I saw Jerry Mathers. And I, wait a minute, he's actually appropriated Leave It to Beaver to make a historical argument? But then again, that's been done before. Who was the guy that was running for Congress in North Carolina a couple of years back? Literally used Leave It to Beaver imagery for his campaign commercials? These people are absolutely divorced from reality at this point, Sandra.
It's just stunning. I mean, I don't know what cave Duke is operating out of. He needs to go back to whatever Holocaust denying conference he's missed out on. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know what? He has been back behind the baseboards for a while, but he's obviously scurried out because he sees an opportunity to try to do a little coattailing on the teabaggers.
But see, that tells me everything I need to know about that racist AstroTurf group. I mean, the one good thing about the whole Tea Party is, like, dude, boy, these white folks, they crazy. That's all the show.
Well, yeah, and they're very convenient. They're very conveniently gathered together and sort of clustered and clumped up into one easily identifiable mess.
Oh my God, no! But you keep running it because it's just sort of it's just making folks look. They've lost it because what are they crying about? The economic situation has debilitated all the communities they're concerned about. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's not a problem in that regard. It's a horrific situation for the people of color, but these dumb white asses don't even know that they're more connected to these communities of color than what they think they're rallying against. And I'm so sick of it. It's been that way since the populist movement with these white folks. They're stupid.
In a word, yes. Atne ute aitbre, if you one what I eat me.
And it's just, I'm just sort of, I don't know if you saw that Tim Weiss article, if the teabaggers were black, goddamn, I was howling. Did you see that?
Yes. In fact, I've got it here in the stack because that's the perfect counter to the Henry Louis Gates stuff. And I love the fact that I presume this to be the original blog post from Tim Wise. The original blog post, the little thumbnail photograph that goes with it, is a photograph of a really scary Samuel L. Jackson.
No, it's a picture of him when he's on that witness seat talking about, I'm glad he died or something from that.
It looks like he's got some sort of CB radio microphone in his hand or something, but I saw it the other day. I just looked, oh my God. Because Tim Wise is correct. If the Tea Party was black, we'd be screaming about the rise of the new Black Panthers.
How many times have I heard these cracks mention the Million Man March? Still, Bob, that's still like.
And that was when?
It was in '95. The thing about it, though, them crackers cannot get over such a large group of males, black males. They still talk about it, and that was the most benign gathering I think I've ever seen.
But lo and behold, in the right wing interview pitches that I get on a daily basis, I got one earlier today that was just it was kind of precious in its own little racist right wing way. It came from the fine folks at Special Guests Incorporated, and it said, when you compare the Reverend Franklin Graham and retired General William G. Jerry Boykin with Tariq Ramadan and Nidal Malik Hassan, a very disturbing trend becomes apparent. Boykin was demonized as a holy warrior in the media for doing the same. Speaking out about Islam. Conversely, Tariq Ramadan was banned from entering the United States until Hillary Clinton recently signed papers allowing him back in. Ramadan had been banned in entry when it was learned that he had ties to the Holy Land Foundation, a terrorist funding organization that was convicted in 2004 on more than 100 counts of financing terrorism. I think that's under appeal, or maybe it was overturned. I can't remember.
Not only that, but, you know, since when? I heard about that man gave a few dollars to an organization that was also providing social services. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? That's just a load. If gun-happy liberal cruise missile Hillary Clinton can overturn it, well, it can't be that bad, right?
Well, you know, I would think, that's why their brain don't work that way. I mean, you know, it's like the stuff with Gates. Obviously, there was, you know, there was some trading in human flesh on the African continent. There's no getting around that. I mean, among other things, the Muslim traders and the various, you know, there were advanced, highly sophisticated kingdoms in Africa. That much is true. And to the loser goes the short end of the stick. But to sit the Gates argument that you're laying out here, Sandra, makes it sound as though Gates is claiming that they put up a big neon blinking neon light, slaves here, come and get them, And the white Europeans just sort of stumbled into it.
And not only that, but the black elites in Africa put guns to the whitey's head and said, and keep them enslaved, too, while you're at it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's my thing. I'm like, okay, what happened, though, once they did the Middle Passage? Did the African elites come along with them, and were they overseers? Did I miss that chapter?
Well, and how does this... how does he create where's the linkage between the reparations and...
Exactly. No, that is the main argument about it. I mean, the sort of, if you want to splice up what was going down in the various ports in West Africa, that's fine. But what the hell does that have to do with reparations? And more importantly, the Billy Graham-loving Barack Obama, what the hell does that have to do with that? I'm sorry to throw that little bit in there.
No, but I'm licked. I'm whipped. I give up.
I'm tripping on that move. They're all under the radar, but he was there holding court with that freak.
I know.
Anyway, I know it's sacrilege, but I'm like, dude, what in the world? You don't have to do that. And what are you looking in the presidential book? Oh, page 20. Now it's time to go visit Ted Whitey, Jew-hating evangelist, before he croaks?
And because I can never hear Billy Graham's name without thinking about that taped conversation between Richard Nixon and Billy Graham. You know, Billy, we'll never be able to save this country if we don't get after those Hollywood Jews.
And he's saying we got to do something about the Jews, and I'm thinking, oh, what are we going to do, round them up?
We've,
you know what I'm saying?
We've seen this movie.
Oh, shit. Now, when I heard that fool was down there sitting with that 91-year-old freak, I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Meanwhile, at the airport, they take down this McVeigh character, another McVeigh, who's just wandering around the airport with his brand-new concealed carry permit and a pistol on his hip.
That's right. Yeah, when I heard McVeigh, I'm thinking, oh, what's happening? The undead, the zombies are really here. They're back. But listen, let me ask you something. Was that Blankenship at that funeral?
You know, for the longest time, I thought he wasn't, because he certainly wasn't up there speaking. But lo and behold, yes, he was.
Oh, shit. Because I didn't know, and I was kind of scared to even find out. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And I've got it. No, I watched that whole thing yesterday, and I was really, really not okay when I saw at the very end, and this is, it's disgusting. There's this photograph of him that I actually caught hell for tweeting and referring to Blankenship as vermin. Of him sitting, it's the dead eyes, you know, Sandra. It's those dead eyes that he's got.
Yeah, no, his bad energy comes through, you know, whatever YouTube I've looked at. I'm like, this dude, you know, he's off. He's off. You're right.
And he's standing there with a bunch of massy executives around him. And all I said was that, you know, look at the vermin and behold his black clad minions like a murder of crows. Because it's you know what? This is funny. Since the objection, to my using it went out, this is precious. The photograph itself has been changed such that you can't get it singularly. I kid you not. The faces on the minions behind Blankenship are stunning.
Well,
because they're looking, they're all looking sort of off to their right, and Blankenship's got his hands together either like he's Montgomery Burns or he's clapping at something. And they're all looking off to their right, and there's this one guy next to the end, an old fart, who looks like the creepy old guy that was the stand-in stunt double for Ron Howard's brother in one of the Star Trek episodes, you know, where he looked like a baby. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And And these looks of disgust and horror and just loathing drip off the photograph. It's amazing.
Well, I mean, because I really wanted to hear what you thought of, you know, Obama doing that eulogy. Because I have to say, when I first saw that report, I thought, wow, I was, you know what I mean?
I thought it was elegantly done. I thought it was tastefully done. I thought Joe Biden had the go away quote. Joe Biden, when he said, "Let me tell you, I know what it's like to lose a spouse and a child, and I know what that feels like," and he elaborated on it a little bit, was quite possibly the most touching moment that there was. And mostly what Barack Obama said was tastefully done. And warmly done and sincerely done, but I'll be damned if I didn't just run around the room screaming when he repeated the advertising slogan of the West Virginia Coal Association for them. This is the West Virginia Coal Association that hates his very guts. And he repeated their advertising slogan for them: coal keeps the lights on.
No way! Oh, wow. I mean, I don't even know what to say about that, because I thought that it rose to the occasion of him doing that in lieu of, you know, what went down. But it's not a replacement for handcuffs and mines being closed and mountaintop removal stopping.
No.
I thought him and his cohorts deserve to be there and look at them people in the face. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Yes,
and,
I do.
But beyond that, they sort of reminding all those poor people that, well, you know, you got to keep doing it because it blah, 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 keeps the lights on. No. You know what I mean?
Well, because there was an element of, you know, and I'll catch hell for this too, but there was an element of stay on the plantation and keep chopping that cotton. Because that's, you know, that's this, you know.
Thanks to the unlikely confluence of history and genetics.
Yeah.
You know, if I can quote Gates again. Oh, my God. Okay, yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. Because it's such an ugly situation, and this accident just begs for radical changes, don't it?
Yes, it does. And that's the whole point. This is, you can, Sandra, I'm sorry, I'm not at a loss for words. I'm trying to say this without sounding like an ass, and I got a feeling I lose either way.
Oh boy, yeah.
But just because you give a slave a color TV doesn't make the slave any less a slave. Okay? In the days when the theft of the land was fairly new, and the people impressed into coal mining were fairly recent, the first generation of it, the chains did not sit lightly. And that was the birth of the organizing in the coal fields. Okay? My great-grandfather was part of it. My grandfather was part of it. Those days were militant days. Because free people, who were largely Scots-Irish, and had, you know, jealously guarded their isolation, suddenly found themselves absolutely murdered with debt. You know, basically the same thing that Thomas Jefferson proposed be done to the Indians in Illinois was done to the hillbillies in Appalachia. You come in with some legal documents that do legal magic hoodoo that does them out of their land. Then you look at them and say, well, there's a reason you're so poor. You don't have anything, and you got to come to work in the mines.
Mm.
And then you say, but we're not going to pay you in money, slave. We're going to pay you in company scrip, and you can only spend it at the company store, and the prices are inflated by 300 to 500%.
Right. It's like sharecropping. How sharecropping was.
It's the same model, Sandra.
Right, the same model. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
so that the people involved with, well, you know, wait a minute. because, you know, they were working 72-hour work weeks. And in some cases, 84-hour work weeks. 12 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah, and you had, decades of a labor movement, created to eliminate at least some of the most horrific, blatant safety issues. And here we are in 2010 with non-union mines operating, and you have this disaster. And I don't care how much eulogizing goes on, we all know that had that mine been up to code, unionized, it wouldn't have happened. You see what I'm saying?
Well, by the same token, the spin. I don't know if you caught the story or not, Sandra, and I'll try not to take up too much of your time on this, but Massey hired a humongous high-dollar silk stocking PR firm to manage their image problems. And they held a press conference today in Charleston, at the Civic Center, no less, at which they trotted out Don Blankenship and retired Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, who occupies an endowed LBJ chair at the University of Texas, who is a total national security spook. And I don't, you know what I mean by that.
Yeah.
And they said, well, no. The explosion happened because MSHA made us change our ventilation plans. And there was no methane in the mines within 10 to 20 minutes before the explosion occurred, according to the readings taken by the foreman at the shift change.
Well, no, I saw that story, and I was like, huh? Is that where this is coming out of?
Yes.
Wow, because I sure did.
I mean, there was so much spin going on today that the mountains themselves were moving in West Virginia, Sandra.
Well, no, and I get the impression that the sort of, showing up of the president and the vice president is somehow supposed to provide some closure, and then you don't need to see anything over here,
Right. Party's right? Over, and never That's... mind the fact that we told people we would fire them if they went to the funerals. Never mind the fact that we won't let widows place wreaths at the gate.
And the coal digging goes on, more importantly.
Right.
Is that mine back up yet?
No. I doubt if it'll be up. I'm told. I was told by that young man I ran into in the grocery store last week. He said it'll be a year before they can work that mine again. And that only makes it, again, I go back to the plantation mentality, Sandra, or the plantation model. That just makes it worse on the people, on the slaves in the other sections of the plantation, because they got to produce twice as hard. Because all of this is tied to production contracts that Don Blankenship signed with the People's Republic of China and the Chinese Communists that promise almost the entire output of every one of his underground mines to their steel mills.
Well, so where is that output coming from now? Are you trying to say that it's being made up by the other workers elsewhere?
How damn straight! They just completed the acquisition of Cumberland, I think it was Cumberland Mining over in Virginia, which was an independent outfit, and they will now ramp up production there because this whole thing, and the whole thing's a house of cards, Sandra.
Okay, wait, when you say they acquired it, what are you talking about? You mean Massey bought it or they signed an agreement?
No, Massey bought it for a combination of Massey stock and ice-cold cash.
Okay, so all this death is going on, and these bitches are still merging and doing a little business deal.
Oh, hell yeah.
Keep it output up at that level you're talking about. Wow, I mean, it's just sort of stunning, just to oppose with Obama give all the eulogy and stuff. Yeah, no, that's a bit of a ugly picture you're painting there, Bob, I have to say.
And yet this is the little toxic topper on top of the cake though, Sandra. After Barack Obama went and repeated the West Virginia Mining Association's slogan on air to the world for them, PR that they couldn't buy in a million years. They've got clips of him now saying, coal keeps the lights on. Right? Right. So after this happens, what? Well, how do they follow it? Well, I give you a really, really creepy bastard from the National Mining Association who said in a blog posting or in some sort of in some sort of PR press release today. This creep named Luke Popovich from the National Mining Association responded to Barack Obama's generosity in doing the coal industry's PR for them by saying the following. You'd be hard-pressed to find a president whose actions have been more warlike on coal. There are those who say the president has parked his tanks on our front lawn, and it's hard to dispute that. Did I lose you?
Oh, dear God. Are you kidding me?
Wish I was.
Okay, so is this just a...
By the way, the board of directors of the National Mining Association includes Don Blankenship.
Oh, no, but is this just the case of them, they can't get beyond the man's face, and they don't hear what we hear? Because what I hear is someone doing PR for them.
Yeah, he did everything but call us the Saudi Arabia of coal yesterday.
Okay, yet and still, that's the response he gets?
Yeah.
To the war metaphors again?
Yeah. Right, and you know what? It's going to play, and it's going to work. They had to put, but you see, they had to put this out there, and I guess this is sort of the flip side of that coin. The National Mining Association had to restart the war on Barack Obama this morning, Sandra, because he was met by warm roars of adulation and adoration and appreciation yesterday.
No doubt. I mean, like I said, overall, that was a fantastic move for the, you know, leader of this country to look the families and this, you know, to be there because of what the hell those people have just gone through, losing their family members. I just thought that was very appropriate and something that W would never even enter his mind. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Now, I gotta tell you, it made me nervous to have the president and the vice president in the same building in West Virginia at the same time yesterday. It really did. Because, remember, you know, you go back to 2008, and May of 2008 in the West Virginia Democratic primary, 23% of the Hillary voters said, well, I just can't have no Muslim in the White House, and I don't think America's ready for a Negro president.
Well, why did West Virginia become West Virginia, though?
Because we didn't want to be part of the Old Dominion.
You know, I mean,
we don't want to be answering to Marsh Robert no more.
Oh, good night. I remember that woman in particular who was like, I will never forget her face, the one who was sort of fronting for saying.
Oh, yeah, because the little mental wood burning set has carved her into my mind, too. I just can't take it.
Oh, my Lord. So you felt a little bit nervous with both of them there. Well, they must have had a huge security detail, right?
Oh, it was massive.
It wasn't massive enough because McVeigh was.
Yeah, that was. Know. But see, that's the thing where they kind of got a little bamboozled because that was just trying to get out of North Carolina, and dude was running around in a car with all kinds of cop radio gear. I mean, among other things, apart from some obscure sounding statute in North Carolina that sounds like presenting yourself as a. Making terrorism noises in North Carolina. He's also been charged with impersonating an officer by running around in a dummied up cop car looking thing.
Oh, dear God. I mean,
and here's the fun part, Sandra. They only found him after Obama had left. He was there the whole time.
Well, no, but see, if you're conspiracy-minded, you can just look at this as just sort of just different warnings for the, you know, HNIC, just to let him know, well, you know, it could be so easy. I swear to God.
Mistakes can happen.
Yeah, that's what
hey,
I'm
remember, saying. Remember, Sandra, remember his Secret Service handle? And I'm the only guy that picked this up.
Well, what is it?
Renegade. His Secret Service handle is Renegade, and the handle was given out by somebody who is roughly our age, you know, because that's where you would be in the echelons of the Secret Service if you were, you know. His handle is Renegade, and I looked at it. Do you remember the Styx song by the same name?
No,
Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law. Hangman is coming for me, and I don't have very long. And it's all this moany, groany, Tommy Shaw singing kind of thing, a cappella. But then it busts out on the line, the jig is up. And see, that's why I think he's Renegade. The jig is up.
Oh, no. Well, see, no, I'm sorry. I mean, I was reading somewhere where they've gotten more threats, like, in the history of the world against this man. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And then you have the never-ending march of the Tea Party. You see what I mean? The environment was...
Oh, yeah, scary. And, you know, Tim Wise is 100% spot on, Sandra. What would have happened if a bunch of angry black people with guns had been marching around in Northern Virginia last week?
Well, AK-47s, as he put it. I was just like, dear God. I mean, the absurd. It's just such a theater of the absurd, but it's... Is it escalating, or have they petered out? I mean, what's
No. The gun sales are still on the rise. The bullet sales are still on the rise.
Well, no, and also, I know I should hang up, but I just sort of, the Arizona law, you know, hello?
Yeah, you know it's bad when Tom Tang Creepy comes out and says, I think this one's gone a little too far.
Well, listen, it's just, it is literally papers, please. And I can't wait for the spring training to go on. How's that going to work out?
Oh, you know, right. Yeah, how, and, you know, it's a valid question. How long until, you know, Jorge Hernandez, who bats 321 right-handed and, you know, has a slugging percentage of whatever and a multi-million-dollar contract, how long till he gets a couple of beers in him after a spring training game somewhere in Arizona and goes to drive home, and the next thing you know, we've got a dead Jorge Hernandez?
Well, you know what I'm saying? Or a number of high-profile Latino superstars, since Arizona is like ground zero for spring training, ain't it? That in Florida.
That in Florida, sure. That's what I'm saying. You know, how long?
You know, and I'm just thinking, one would like to think that it's going to be challenged in court, right? And it doesn't...
I think the city of Phoenix is already considering launching its own lawsuit.
For 90 days or something after the close of the session? The thing is, I was looking at that troll that signed it. Hello, go back into the office. She's horrific.
Oh, she's nasty.
I had never seen her before. I thought, dear God.
And without sounding hopelessly misogynistic, which I probably will anyway and don't mean to, the Sue Loudon in Nevada, who has skin stretched across her face tighter than the unwrapped Tutankhamun.
Runner up for Miss Another One of Them Pageant Bitches.
Yeah, and this woman in Arizona. I mean, I don't get it. Yeah, and you know, the thing is, it sets feminism back decades. These women do. Because, you know, all along, you know, people like the late, great Molly Ivins made arguments about, you know, maybe it's a woman's chance to try to get things done, because Lord knows the men haven't done so hot.
Well, no, but,
Jan Brewer and Sue Loudon and Sarah Palin come along, and it's like, ooh, you're 10 times as creepy as any guy.
No, and it's just sort of the whole white, I'm sorry to keep going there, but just the clueless white women, you see what I mean? They're put on a pedestal, and they're allowed to operate freely without being gotten the hell slapped out of them, and that's what they act like.
And you know what? If I was, you know, heard on 5 million radio stations, and I had just said what I just said, I would be pilloried in the national press for it.
Well, no, but it's just sort of, you know, because...
Because I would be violating their rights as feminists.
No, they dumb as a bag of rocks, though, all those three women you just talked about. The only thing that they have is the American Express card of being white. I'm sorry. And these Republican women.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. You know, they're all, you know, well, you know, we need traditional family values and stuff.
Yeah.
But the minute you criticize them, they're out there hollering that that they're being put down for being women.
No, that dumbass Nevada said you can pay your doctor bills with a fucking chicken. Hello.
She did. She did precisely.
Well, you know what I mean? What in the world?
I know.
I've never seen anything so stupid in my life. And then she's going to come out defensive about something, some sort of horrific comment like that. I mean, it boggles the mind.
I just hope that this thing is so successful that they make her own it well enough. I mean, honest to God, I never thought I would see the day, but it's American politics, and why am I not surprised? I never thought I would see the day where I actually gave a damn about Harry Reid winning his seat back.
Well, listen, she's leading by 10 percentage points. Maybe she's lost a few after that comment, but she was leading the last time I saw.
But and the other part of that is, you know, you're not in Nevada, and neither am I. And as a consequence of that, you never know. That crazy throwback nostalgia BS, you know, this is even pre-Leave It to Beaver, with all apologies to Dr. Duke. That stuff may play. That stuff may play in the hinterlands of Nevada, because I forget who it was that told me the other day that, you know, 2.5 feet outside the Vegas city limits and, baby, you're in Alabama.
Oh, not only that, but, I mean, them women, all three of them women, they will bust out the pearls at a drop of a hat. Have you noticed that?
Oh, well, they're there for the clutching.
It's, you need to stop, because that is, I mean, that Brewer woman had pearls. I thought, lady, you're going to hurt your neck. Did you see them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, David in Tennessee tells me that there are poll numbers due out tomorrow that hopefully will show Sue Loudon's lead closing a little.
Oh, dear God. Anyway, listen, I've kept you on too long, but it's just all this stuff is out of control. I really wanted to share the gates, because I've always disliked.
That's astonishing. That is.
So,
because, you know, I think I'd love to have, I would actually welcome an honest, legitimate, non-frothing at the mouth discussion about reparations. I don't think it would be criminal. I think it would actually be beneficial to us as a society to create a program that actually offers to pay for the first 2 years of college free if you can trace your lineage to slavery.
Well, you have a ready-made vehicle. You can go after corporations. They still exist. That's what they did for, you know, reparations to the Jewish people. And you have corporations that are just sitting mighty pretty right now. You see what I mean? You can go that route if you really are serious about it. But these people aren't serious about it. It's just a straw man to justify.
I mean, the last time I heard reparations mentioned, it was, you know, some crazy ass fringe right winger who really just has not gotten over the inauguration.
Well, no, but there could be like a, you know, the more sinister take on this is that, like I said, the state of the black community for the vast majority of black people is pretty horrific. They're warehoused on a level that's unimaginable. And, you know, there's a lot of research starting to come out about it now. So they need to get themselves together to counter it. And Obama needs to have something to counter it, because his ass is going to run in 2012 with a black community that's completely wiped out on some levels, at least economically. So, you know, I have no idea. I'm really cynical. I think that you have these apologists, these black apologists there in place to keep the conversation away from, you know, the new Jim Crow system that's going on, you know?
Oh, this thing is a toxic onion. It has layers within layers within layers.
And you know, I really am sort of, I try not to dwell too much in that, because it's a big wide world, and, you know, I've had opportunities to get the hell on and out. But, yeah, this country is mired in that shit. It really is.
And the thing is, you have to at least be willing to try to, you know, dig your way out. But in many ways, we're not. We're just not.
Yeah, anyway, so listen, I'll let you go.
All right, Sandra, thanks a million. Great conversation. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. And we roll onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Not a whole lot, but like you said before, they don't need no stinking badges.
No, and they intend to prove it, too.
But what, well, the thing that bothered me yesterday about that whole ceremony they had in Beckley, where they had this black chaplain who, in his invocation, said this is no type of invitation to the United Mine Workers. Did you catch that?
No, that one slid past me. I would have been screaming. I would have been screaming sooner.
Surprised you're not, because he certainly did it, and I thought it was in extremely bad taste. That's exactly, that was the second thing he mentioned in his invocation.
I'll be damned. And I thought I'd seen the worst of it.
Well, no, you didn't. I caught that. And last night on the History Channel, they had this thing about the building of America. That's not the exact title of it.
Yeah, the story of America or something like that. Yeah.
Who had three spots on there with honor, dignity, courage, homage to those miners who were killed, and guess who paid for that?
Massey.
Massey Energy.
Well, you know, that's what you get when you hire a multi-bajillion dollar PR firm. They're going to be out there, and they're going to wage, because they realize that their bacon's in the fire, Jim.
I know it, but you know, going back to David Duke, if we may, please.
Absolutely.
This guy came in to the public eye back in the late 60s, middle 70s, and it was right after the demise of Robert Sheldon and people like this, the grand kahunga-hunga of the Klan or whatever. And they were trying to put a new image on the Klan with this clean-cut, attractive young white man that he was at that time. And it's the same old story, you know? If you don't believe it, I saw an excellent documentary that was done by Morris Deeds at the Southern Poverty Law Ship Center. And Mr. Duke figured very prominently in that, and so did Morris Deeds, because Morris Deeds has sued more of these people than you can imagine in one of these white supremacists. And
oh, he's broken them.
Absolutely. And I will tell you, these people, these teabaggers and people like that, remind me, I don't know why it is, and I thought about this Friday night when I was listening to your program. They remind me of the same type of characters that were portrayed in The Manchurian Candidate with Angela Lansbury.
Yes, I'm well familiar with the film, yes.
And the mentality of these people and what they were trying to do in the name of patriotism. And yet they were paid Soviet agents in the movie.
Yes.
And these people, in my opinion, could not do more harm to Sarah Palin and her whole crowd. She was the Angela Lansbury of my mindset at the time of the listening to your show. And, you know, they...
No, because the Angela Lansbury character was just creepy.
And, of course, that idiot husband of hers, who couldn't even tell how many communists there were in the State Department. So she pulled out a bottle of Heinz 57 ketchup, 57, and said, well, instead of saying 295, why don't you just say 57? Can you remember that if you're sober enough?
Yeah, because that was the other thing. I remember him being a big lush.
Right, and a fool as well. But, you know, the whole thing goes back to, and I don't know if this... There seems to, at this time of year, between April 20th and April 30th, between the day of Hitler's birthday and the day of his suicide, you have more crap like this that starts to come out. That was brought out on the Joy Behar show this morning.
Oh, yeah, because there's so many other things that sort of flow around it. There's Hitler's birthday and Waco. And then, you know, what's the there's something that happened in American history that they claim as their pretext. But, you know, there's Columbine and...
Exactly. A number of events they've chosen between those, between the 20th and the 30th of April. But going back to the thing about Hollywood, has David Duke never heard of the Brothers Lasky or Louis B. Mayer?
No, see, I was going to say that, but it's... Right.
Heard.
Samuel Goldwyn? I mean...
Bill Goldwyn? I mean, Hollywood, of course, was, you know, very much influenced by enterprising Jewish businessmen. And, of course, I'll tell you, I've been reading lately, and, you know, I do read. It's a wonder my eyes don't turn back at the size of a dust jacket. But I've been reading three books. I just finished them in the past 10 days. The first is The Pianist. Of course, I made a movie about that with Adrian Brody, about the Jewish pianist in Warsaw, Władysław Szpilman. And God only knows how that poor man survived, but it's his own autobiography of his days in the Warsaw Ghetto. And the second book is A Private View, written by Irene Mayer Selznick, the daughter of
David O.
And did Mr. Duke ever hear of David O. Selznick, who was Jewish?
No, but see, that doesn't, you know, the facts and history and truth of any sort are lost on these people within their pathetic determination to create a history that suits their purposes. This is, you know, this is all ends-based propagandizing. And, you know, we shouldn't be surprised because even the Tea Party itself is without regard to history. And, you know, we have, frankly, the religious right to thank for a lot of this, Jim, because they're the ones that started making up American history wholesale without reference to actual facts decades ago with the this is a Christian nation hokum and hoopla and BS when it isn't. But that doesn't slow them down because, you know, the Bible itself says, you know, that the devil is a liar.
Of course. And this is the
And that's what these people are. They are servants of that darkness, if you will.
They are servants of the propagation of the big lie. And we all know who coined the term the big lie. It was Hitler's propaganda minister, Joseph Goebbels, who said, if you're going to tell a lie, don't tell little lies because everybody tells those little white lies and they can get caught in them and they understand them. But if you're going to tell a lie...
Tell a whopper.
You tell a whopper. You tell a lie that's so big that nobody could ever question its veracity. And that's what these individuals are doing, and they're wrapping themselves in the flag of this country. And I'm going to tell you something. It really upsets me a great deal. Because I spent 30 years of my life serving this country and serving that flag. And I sure as hell did not serve that kind of mentality of lies, discrimination, and the doctrines that would promote the denigration of the working man or the poor people of this country who made its existence possible.
That's as well said as it has recently been said, Jim. I thank you very much. And before we go any further, I have to share with you the latest news from South Carolina, knowing that that's your home state. I got a note in from our buddy David in South Carolina about the latest pronouncements from Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer, whom I know you take delight in. Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer said on April the 23rd that lazy South Carolinians who don't want to take jobs harvesting the state's crops are the cause of South Carolina's illegal immigration problems.
He said that.
He most assuredly did.
Oh, that man is... I cannot say you cannot take him seriously, because that's what people said about Adolf Hitler back in the 30s. You have to take people like him seriously.
Precisely, Jim. Hallelujah. Thank you for saying that.
But, you know, that guy has done all kinds of crap. I remember he got into a DUI thing using a state vehicle. Then he injured his leg in that accident, and then, as if to exonerate himself with his public, he walked across the new bridge or ran across the new bridge they just erected across the Cooper River that goes over to the Isle of Palms from Charleston. And, of course, Charleston is basically, it's where I went to school. I'm a graduate of the Citadel, as you know, and the Military College in South Carolina. I know the area well. And I thought to myself, well, what is this? And a family member called me and told me what Andre had done. And, of course, some of my family belong to these teabaggers, and they belong to this sort of mentality. And I don't have a whole lot to do with them. It's caused a serious rift with me personally. And I just don't really discuss it with them too much because, I mean, when you're dealing with family, what can you do, okay? They're setting their ways.
You know what, Jim? In many ways, it is the most painful part of all of this because I think I say this informally based on what I've seen in the chat room, what I've seen in my email, what other people have said on the program. There are lots of folks in the Horn family who experience the very same thing that you have just described, that they have people within their family who have been sucked into this perpetual night of the right wing, and it destroys families. For all they talk about the republic, about family values, that this rift that has been created not by the left, not by a bunch of liberals. You know, we want to have harmony, remember? But by the right wing's inherent divisiveness, is the greatest sin that they have perpetrated, because they have broken families asunder. I have experienced it, you have experienced it, and I could, if I wished, I could tick off probably 10 people that I hear from routinely here within on the show who have experienced the same damn thing.
You know, here's the thing. I didn't stay in South Carolina. I left, and, you know, I travel, and I've been to Germany, been to the same stadium where Hitler used to make his speeches, stood right there in the same logo where he used to pronounce his doctrines of hatred from. That did not make me a Nazi, yet I was called a Nazi for doing that. Been to Moscow. I didn't bring home any busts of Joseph Stalin either. And, you know, at least I was able to travel and learn from the mistakes of these countries and some of the stuff that they did, but still come back with a good feeling in my heart toward the German people as a good people and toward the Russian people as a good people, victimized by history and tortured more by their own fellow citizens than they were by any foreign invader.
Absolutely. Absolutely, you're so correct, since I do know that you find interesting, this is just a little a tidbit for your consideration. When you've got a few spare minutes, just search on the internet for some of the writings of Helen Keller, because I ran across an essay last night that she wrote in opposition to the Western blockade of Russia during the October, following the October Revolution.
Yeah, right.
It is profound.
It is indeed. And I'll say one other thing. When I was in the National Cathedral last, you know, she and her, the ashes of she and her companion are interred there.
Yes.
And when I stood before the marker on the wall that covers the columbarium in which their ashes are, and I think their ashes have been put together, the feeling in my heart was such that I was absolutely transfixed.
Hers is a life that is much more worth studying than most people do anymore, because like many great people, great personages, Jim, she has been distilled to the little blind girl who learned to read without reference to what she read.
Exactly. One more thing about this. I mean, this is the carnival of the of the Moranosphere or the Moranosphere or whatever you call it. But honestly and truly, the people that you've been discussing with some of the other guests and what you have said, these must be the freak show and the hoochie coochie show of all time.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. It is a P.T. Barnum could not have dreamt up such a freak show. This is better than a three-headed chicken any day. Although one wonders what one would get at the doctor's office for such a creature.
Well, the only thing I can say to that, and I'll leave you, is I would like to tell them that they need to go see the Egress.
Yes, they do. And let's charge them mightily for access to it too.
Thank you, sir.
Take care, Jim. Yeah. Bye now. Yeah, that's what we need for the teabaggers. A big sign, this way to the Egress. Only $10. This way to the patriotic Egress. There you go. Ooh, I'm liking it. I am liking it a lot. Onward we roll. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Bob. It's Kevin from Seoul.
Well, hey, Kevin. How are you?
Fine. At least I should say good evening to you. You know, it's amazing, you know, that last conversation. Hey, if anybody knows families being broken up by the right wing, it's me.
Yes.
And unfortunately, and there is an African-American right wing out there who feel they can get a good deal if they suck up to the tea baggers and all that.
Right.
And they don't like Barack Obama either.
Oh, no, it's well worth remembering that wasn't it a Brooklyn preacher who called Barack Obama's mother,
a Harlem preacher, but that's
okay, Harlem, not Brooklyn, yeah.
Yeah, it's that self-loathing that Calvinism, extreme Calvinism puts on people.
Yes, it does.
And that's what it does, because a lot of times I used to get, we're entitled to health insurance. I used to go, well, what have you done to be entitled to health insurance? Well, I have to look at it and say, excuse me? In most civilized societies, we take care of the sick.
And that's civilized societies. And Kevin, in enlightened societies, we do everything possible to prevent the sickness in the first place. You know, most of what plagues America today is largely preventable. I mean, there's no cure for life itself that's going to come down the pike. No one here gets out alive. But the fact of the matter is, the things we lose to preventable diseases, heart disease, lung disease, preventable cancers that are caused by the crap that we pour into our ecosystem on a daily basis. You know, when I think that there are, what's the number I saw? There are 1,000 gallons a day of crude oil pumping into the Gulf of Mexico from that sunken oil rig out there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I haven't heard Drill Baby Drill Sarah Palin say anything about that.
Well, Sarah, you know, I have nothing to say about her. But also, you know, going back to Helen Keller, fellow Alabamian, if I got that word right, like yourself, this is the dumbing down of America, because I learned about Helen Keller when I was about 7 years old. And her readings and her writings on social justice. Like 7 years old. I don't think if I could go to a New York City public school or even most private schools, they would know who she is.
The best they know is she was America's first lady of courage.
I don't even think they would know. I don't even think they would know that. I really don't. It's like when I was growing up in school, I learned about the union movement and all that and coal mining. And we went through some of the music of Arlo Woody Guthrie, if I pronounced it right.
Yeah, Woody Guthrie, sure.
Yeah, you know, they don't learn that now. Who they learn about, believe it or not, in many of our social studies class, because they say we have to adjust the lessons to what they like now, Biggie and Tupac. kind of like the Ebonics argument, don't you think? I can't teach them something they already know.
You know, that's like something that I saw featured on the Young Turks that was sent to me. There is, and with you over there in South Korea teaching, you might find this interesting. You know, there's a burgeoning movement of so-called homeschooling in this country, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's a subset, an offshoot of that, Kevin, if you can imagine, called unschooling.
Unschooling.
This is where children are, basically parents sign up as homeschoolers, and then they don't teach their children anything, and it's all done under the guise of, well, we don't want to force any learning on them. They will learn what they need to know in the world when they need to know it. And the thing that the Young Turks played was a piece from Good Morning America in which these children, you know, they would be juniors and sophomores in high school, okay, pointed to a window box and said, "We're growing pickles."
Oh, wow.
We are growing pickles. Not we're growing cucumbers. They're gonna come right off the vine, all tart, tangy, and salty. These unschooled children were growing pickles.
Oh boy, yeah.
So while the rest of the world busts its ass and produces engineers and scientists hand over fist, there is an actual movement inside the United States. The dumbing down of America has reached that critical mass, Kevin, where we've got a movement inside America that says all formal learning is bad. I mean, this literally turns every cultural tradition of the planet on its ears. From the day that we were hunter-gatherers, the elders of the tribe passed down essential survival skills to the young. Whether it be Asia, whether it be Africa, whether it be North America or Europe itself, we had some form of learning, some understand. You know, our word academy comes from the name of the school that was founded by Plato in Athens, in which critical reasoning was taught. You know, these kids that were profiled on the Good Morning America segment. You know, the girl stays up until, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, gets up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, it keeps her, you know, because, you know, we want her to be free. And the saddest thing out of this is that it was easy to tell that the parents were what you and I would recognize as, and I blush to say it, liberals.
Yeah, but also just lazy. You know, it's like a lot of parents want to be their children's homie or friend and not parents anymore. And that doesn't fly.
You can be friendly toward and you can strive to have a really good relationship with, but every now and then as a parent, and you know, every parent has to learn this the hard way. I don't like authoritarianism. I don't like being authoritarian. But every now and then, you got to look up and say, no, it goes my way or no way.
Exactly.
And it's not because you get off on being authoritarian. It's because you're up on the verges of one of those places where a child can make a mistake that can screw up their life forevermore.
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, I have a neighbor down the street, and I can see and it's sad, you know, not to sound like a snob, how they've gone from almost African-American affluent within two generations to going on borderline social service recipient.
And you know what? But the ethnic component is not part of the process, Kevin, I would submit, because all of America is going that way.
Yeah.
And it's not because of David Duke's assertion of, you know, diversity isn't doing this to us.
No.
Dadgummit, corporations are doing this to us.
Well, Reaganomics
is doing this to us.
Yeah. and Greenspan, and this is my issue with Obama, is he's part of that school. That's who signed off on his paycheck when he was busy being community activism. Now, that's what he counted off a regular salary. So as much as he comes off as being this leftist and all that, he is no leftist or progressive.
Well, see, I don't even think he comes off as one. I have never seen in Barack Obama anything but a rock-ribbed, dedicated, centrist, middle-of-the-roader.
Oh, you're absolutely right, but, you know, like that 3% crowd, they're going to see him as a...
Yeah, but that's because they're insane. And anything to the left of Mussolini is full on communism.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's just in the course of this phone call, Kevin, I can tell. I think if I may laud myself a little, I can hear in your voice that there is something transformative taking place in you now that you're there.
Hell yes! I'm not going to lie to you. I'm sorry to say.
Because, you know what? Every now and then, looking at something through a long lens presents you with a vastly different picture than looking at it in close-up.
And unfortunately, you know my biggest frustration here? You know, and I guess since I'm still kind of new. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. Since I'm still kind of new here, I probably am seeing things through those. I hear other expats or, you know, foreign teachers or whatever saying how he'll get to them. I say, why don't you leave?
Yeah.
I haven't had a reason to complain yet. Yeah.
And you know what? You likely won't.
Yeah.
You're among decent people in a decent corner of the globe, and you likely won't because. And it's not a function of governmental structure. But let's face it. Short of a couple of other countries on the planet, the United States is the most dysfunctional country in the world. And it is the most dysfunctional of any of the so-called developed nations. Now, you know, if some right winger were listening, see, he don't love America. I love America with all my heart, Kevin, and I want it to get well. I feel like this country is sick. It's ailing. It's ill.
Well Bob, I used to love America, but I'm no masochist. You know, I just can't take the S&M game that the country's been playing with me for the past, you know, 20, 30 years of my life. Since I've been 10 years old, roughly. You know, sorry to say it. You know, and it's almost frightening. Like, I've told people, and they're like, oh, you know, I'm not saying I'll never come back. You know, that would be too much for me to say. Of course I got to come back because my family's there, and I'm on, you know. But still, it's just one of those things where I'm content and happy here. You know, I really am.
And you know what? I hope that only continues and increases, Kevin. It's awfully good talking to you, and you have yourself a good morning.
Okay, you too, sir, and God bless.
Thanks.
Oh, by the way, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Little guy's just growing and thriving. He's cute as can be.
Good, man.
All right. Take care, Kevin. Bye now. Formerly of Brooklyn and now of South Korea, that is our good friend of long standing. That's Kevin. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Bob, you must be just about due for a break. It's Dave up in Humboldt County, California.
You know, I had a pretty decent weekend. I'm just kind of feeling filibobstery.
You are? Okay. Well, we'll go on. I still very much enjoy your thinking, and so I'm still the only way that I can hear you is to call in and hope that you put me on hold for a while, and you did. I had been hoping to hear your thoughts on a couple of subjects. But I still have these goons, the high-tech types that are all over my internet and to a degree with the radio, so I'm only at the mercy of what I can accomplish here listening on hold. I'm being asked to give a talk on a subject that I just thought you'd probably have some input for me on. a posteriori reasoning versus a priori reasoning. Have I rung a bell, or is it?
Oh, you've rung a bell that gives me Excedrin headache number 962, Dave.
Oh. Well, it's a...
I remember. No, I remember that. A priori versus a posteriori. You know, basically before the fact versus after the fact reasoning.
Right. I understand it's the philosophy that was Russell, that was Bertrand Russell, Whitehead and Carnap and... Not Whitehead. I guess the A.J. Ayers and Ludwig Wittgenstein. I understand that, you know, that if you have the ability to scientifically demonstrate your view, you then hold to a posteriori reasoning. After you can hammer on it, measure it, and test it, and taste it, and poke, then you have a right to believe it and espouse it.
Right, because it's been subjected to some sort of rigorous testing.
Yes, right. Uh-huh. As opposed to merely the idea, the thought, the what the preacher's telling you is not that, you know.
Right. No, it's not. And in fact, I would go so far as to say, Dave, that theology does not fall within. Within the general space of either one of those forms of reasoning, because theology by its very definition does not involve reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
Theology is received doctrine. Theology is saying, and it doesn't, whether it be Christian, Jewish, Muslim, whatever. You know, there's that little bumper sticker that's out there, and I think you could probably translate it into Hebrew or Arabic just fine, and it would not lose its meaning for fundamentalists. I grew up with it, of course, in English, Dave, and what the little bumper sticker says is, God said it, I believe it, that settles it.
Mm-hmm.
So what religion asks you to do is organize religion. Is what I mean, not spirituality. That I hope we're all clear on that. What organized religion asks you to do is to accept a preconceived set of notions and never, ever, ever, ever question them.
I guess that's correct. I think that's essentially what we're being told to do, and a lot of people...
Well, I mean, you know, consider just because this is easy and right off the top of my head, the Roman Catholic Church says that condoms are bad. Condoms are literally a mortal sin, the use of which will condemn you to eternal torment by your maker. Now, any rational mind would look at that and say, you know what? The use of condoms prevents unwanted pregnancies. The use of condoms prevents or slows the spread of disease. The use of condoms is a societal benefit. Good God, they go back to ancient Egypt, if you want to know the fact of it. That's how long they've been recognized as beneficial. They were made of lambskin then. But... you are using your rational mind to reach those conclusions when the church demands that you abandon your rational mind and merely take it literally as gospel, literally as received wisdom which is not subject to question. And there are a million of them. Women in the priesthood. There is no logical reason for that. For banning women from being a celibate priest. But churchy church say no, no, no. So to argue that they should be allowed is heresy. And it goes on and on. In the Muslim world they have that organization in Saudi Arabia that goes around whipping people for violating authoritarian, reasonless, senseless, fundamentalist tenets. And the only reason those people have the power that they have is because they are imbued with it by virtue of a religious doctrine that says you may not question the fact that we're doing this.
Yeah.
It exists in Judaism. It exists in every world religion to the extent that it becomes largely ecclesiastically organized, has some degree of it. I mean, millions have been killed, Dave, over the question, for instance, in the Christian church, of transubstantiation versus consubstantiation. Because the church held that when you eat the little magic cracker, it literally turns into raw Jesus flesh in your belly. Somewhere between the back of your soft palate and your gut, it literally turns into a little hunk of Jesus.
Well, I knew you'd have some wisdom for me, Bob. I'm glad that I made this call, and that you've given me some thoughts to do it. One of the other things that's coming up, and I was hoping to have your input on it, because I'm very active with the Veterans for Peace. That is, I stand my vigils every week and attend meetings whenever they have them.
And bless you for doing it.
Well, you know, but there's a lot of people that think to be a veteran for peace is to be one who hates the army, that hates the soldiers, that hates the military, and that isn't what we're about.
No, it isn't, and that is a construct inside their own sick and twisted mind that is motivated by a love of war and a love of mayhem and killing and death and a lack of regard for what that practice does to the people who are ordered to do it. If you love a soldier, if you love our military, you do everything in your power to keep them from having to do what they are trained to do. And, you know, that's not just crazy old, crazy old peacenik, liberal, kumbaya Bob. That's some of the greatest military minds on the planet. That is literally Sun Tzu's art of war. Sun Tzu says that when you get to the shooting part of the war, or the hitting or the killing part, because this is all pre-firearms, when you get to the part that you're doing that, you have, in essence, already lost. You have already failed when you get to the killing part.
Well, get them back home alive, and I think that is something other than hating them.
Hear, hear. You know, if you hated them, you'd just say, well, let them stay over there and, you know, die to the last man in the hell with them.
Okay.
But that's not it.
I'm hoping that very soon I'm going to again have an internet that will enable me to be able to hear you like a normal human being.
Well, if you will send me an email, I will forward it along to a couple of people. The last time we talked, they said they would love to try to help you.
Oh, so that would be great.
If you will send me an email at Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com, I will in turn forward your email to some folks who have said they would love to be of assistance to you.
Oh, gee, that would be great, because as of right now, they don't allow me an internet. I have to go to the library, and I can do that, and I can send you an email from there, but because I can't go on a chat room, I can go on no chat room. I used to be able to get on this one with the help of Sue.
We'll get you back up to snuff and up to speed, Dave. Don't you worry.
All right, my friend. I'll send you an email. Probably be sometime tomorrow, I hope.
Okay, I will look for it, and I will forward it along when I receive it. Dave, thank you very much, and have a good evening. You want to go back on hold and listen a little longer?
No, that's all right. That's all right. I don't want to run up your chair.
All right, thank you. Take care, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Calling from Northern California, that's Dave. And, yeah, why not? Let's keep rolling. What do you say? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. This is Andy.
Hey, Andy, how are you?
Not from the other side of the coast.
You know what? We just get all over the place.
Man, from one coast to the other. Congratulations. I didn't catch what you have, a grandson?
Yeah, our third grandchild, little fella born a week ago last Saturday.
Wow.
Ah, he's cute. They all are at that age, but, you know, when they're yours, they're cuter. You know how it goes.
Going to take him to Las Vegas this summer?
No. No, we will not be turning the Munchkins loose in Vegas. It'll just be me, Agnes, Ferg, Margie, and Doodle, and some members of the Horn staff. And hopefully we'll just really kick ass and take names and cross your fingers.
Right. I was listening to your first conversation that you had with and I'm having a mental enema. And I'm,
Sandra?
Yeah, exactly. And you were talking about the 29 minors in that service. I just kind of lost it when I heard a few comments, like from Jay Rockefeller and from Manchin, and as well when I heard Obama say those comments about keeping the lights on and the power. I mean, it just, and Manchin in particular said something about, we don't know what caused this. We're going to get to the bottom of this. Just go. This is America in the 21st century, you moron. This stuff does not happen. It should never happen. I mean, it's pretty clear what happened. You know, it's called productivity over safety and total disregard for the rights of workers and the disrespect and dishonor of a working person in America.
Reckless disregard to the point of depraved indifference.
Right. This guy just wanted to drive production over everything else, and nothing else mattered. And with all those violations he had, this is just a joke.
You know what kind of drives me crazy, Andy, is if we have the legal skills, because, frankly, whoever the team was inside the Department of Justice that poured through all of those reams of information from Goldman Sachs to pull together an indictment, if we have the legal know-how and power to do that, surely to God, we've got a couple of lawyers laying around spare in the Department of Justice who should at least theoretically be able to peel Don Blankenship's Ponzi scheme like a damn grape. I mean, comparing the two, I mean, this should not be so difficult, should it?
They had some emails in the paper the other day that explicitly said from him that forget about the safety. If the safety stuff takes you even a few minutes, drop it. Production comes first. That's what matters.
Yeah, well, that was the memo that he put out back before the Aracoma fire that killed two miners back 4 years ago.
Right. It's pretty clear what's driving that place.
But bear in mind also, Andy, that with this multi-million-dollar contract, with this multi-million-dollar PR firm, they started out today by saying there was no methane gas in the mine. Okay? Give that PR firm a couple of weeks and it won't even be a coal mine anymore, and it'll be 29 men dead in a pie factory. Because that's how PR works in this country.
Absolutely. And Goldman Sachs will do the same thing.
Sure.
It'll be to obfuscate, to distort, to misrepresent, to do everything they can to muddy the waters on this. I don't know if you saw the New York Times. Krugman did a piece, but he...
Oh, I did. That was genius. And I saw him follow up on this week with whoever it is that isn't George Stephanopoulos anymore. It was brilliant.
All the emails that they have on... You know, this is the Elliot Spitzer way, too. Collect those emails and just stick it to these guys. And say, you guys want to go to court? We'll go to court. Otherwise, you're going to pay this tremendous settlement. And not something that is just, you know, like a gnat on the rear end of an elephant sort of penalty, but some penalty that takes away maybe three-fourths of a year's profits or something like that. You know, a couple $100 million or a couple $1 billion, something like that.
You know, when you look at the scope of all this stuff, Andy, because we all know I'm a college sports geek, right? There are infractions inside college sports, and there is a rule book inside college sports. We have an easier time imposing the death penalty on a college football program than we do imposing justice on corporate predators. Now, I'm sorry, but that to me is evident, further evidence of what I describe as this country's essential dysfunction.
Right. It's been a slow process, but I think it's speeded up during the last 30 years since we've had a Republican regime since Reagan, where they've, you know, just gone on a direct attack on working people and everything dealing with working people to destroy it, and particularly to take aim at the new union, starting with PATCO and working their way from there, but to totally destroy any kind of collective bargaining or collective union strength in this country. And they've done it. Even, did you hear Rush Limbaugh even went and said, where was the union on this at Massey? The union must have really failed. Of course, there is no union, you moron.
Right.
It's gone. They're gone. In the private sector, they're almost non-existent anymore. It's just incredible. It's just incredible. And like you said, the corporate veil that they have now to go in, and Hartman gets into this with corporate personhood too. It's just so incredibly hard. The only guy that did anything, again, I bring up Elliot Spitzer, and look what happened to him. Because of his own misdeed, his own stupidness, but God, he had a friggin' target on his head, boy. They were gonna get him for what he did, because he was the only one that had teeth in the penalties that he had. And maybe he'll make a comeback or something like that, but I don't know if he'll ever be what he was. But there's nobody else out there that really went and stuck it to corporations. I mean, he almost took out Marsh and McLennan, as I remember. Almost took them out so bad with the penalties, because they were hundreds of millions of dollars he nailed them for, that they almost went under just because of the penalties. And nobody else does that. He did the same thing to other insurance brokers as well, at Aon as well. I mean, he put them in trouble where they were hurting financially. But nobody else does that. And this, I mean, this is a psychopath at work with Don Blankenship. This is a pure psychopath. This is a pure man that has utter disregard for any living creature, anything that...
Anyone who isn't him and his cronies.
Right. He's a murderer. He's a killer. He's just a psychopath. Nothing matters. And I'd like a number of people have said on your show, there's just blankness behind that guy's eyes. There is no remorse. There is no feeling. There's no nothing, man. This guy is just deadpan. He is just deadpan. There is nothing.
But you know what? That I've remarked on it, you remarked on it, and a number of other people have as well. But that is not all that's there, Andy. Because there is a very, very different, there's a very, very different Don Blankenship out there. A few years ago, and I don't know if I've mentioned this in a long time, if ever, a few years ago, he was sued by his maid. Okay? She quit her job as a maid and was refused unemployment benefits and took it all the way to the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court agreed that she was entitled to unemployment benefits because she had been subjected to such abuse that he, for all intents and purposes, fired her. The facts that were developed at trial showed us a picture of an absolute maniac. This was a man, she got an order wrong at McDonald's. Now here's a guy who makes $17.8 million a year, and he still eats at McDonald's. From a philosophical standpoint, Andy, I want him to eat at McDonald's three, four, five times as often as he does. I really, really do. If you've ever seen that film, The Fifth Element, where Zorg begins to choke on a peach pit or whatever it is, or a cherry pit, and has no one to save him, even though he's got millions of dollars. That right there. I want him eating McDonald's breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, and I want it all biscuits and gravy, okay? But So the maid got his McDonald's order wrong. He flew into an absolute rage, Andy, and threw the McDonald's bag at her as hard as he could.
Wow.
On another occasion, she had not hung his sport jacket out for him. And he flew into a screaming frenzy and ripped the sport coat out of the closet with the hanger and flung it at her. And I think even tore the coat. And what was developed at trial was that this happened over and over and over again. But I think I'm probably the only one talking about this right now. The man is a monster.
He sounds sick.
You know, and yet I got crap from a member of the for-profit media for using a photograph of him at that service under fair use doctrine and merely referring to Blankenship as vermin. I was told
that, like it is, Bob.
I was told that the word was nasty.
What he did to those 29 miners is beyond nasty. That's why what makes me vomit is to hear these politicians get up there. And what have those son of a bees done for working people over the past 20, 30 years, especially Jay Rockefeller, but make life worse, 10 times worse for a working person in this country? And where do they stand on cards? I mean, nothing. They're just complete vomit. Complete vomit. And Manchin saying we haven't gotten down to the bottom of this yet. We don't know what happened. But we'll get down to the... God, they just make... These politicians just make you want to vomit.
Well, I'm not kidding. Don't be surprised when it comes out that there were 29 men killed in a pie factory. I mean, that may be a little bit of an overstatement, but it will be... Sooner or later, because this is the whole history of coal in Appalachia, Andy. Sooner or later, Massey Energy will drag poor old Jehovah out and flog him for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because act of God is what they plead every time, without fail. You know, if somebody's...
That lightning strike that was 10 miles away...
Right, the 10 miles away and 3,000 feet underground lightning strike.
Right.
That caused Sago.
Right.
And they were out there at that press conference this morning, we've reduced our safety problems by 90%. Really? Does that include the 29 dead now? Where's that stand now, Don? Yeah, you know, not so much. But, you know, for a member of the for-profit media to give me crap for simply said, and you know, that all, and you can go and you can look on my Facebook page if you do that. You can see exactly what the quote was. I said, see the vermin dressed in black like a murder of crows. And I linked to the photograph and then I said, why is this man not in jail? And for that, I get crap? You know, a little more.
In my book, the guy's a murderer. Plain and simple. He murdered those guys. He just as soon might have stuck a knife in each one of their guts. He murdered them. Plain and simple.
But you know what? Down here on the plantation, we are not prone to say that, Andy.
No, you can't. Not when it's a coal state. In coal town, I'm sure some people do break out, and I know I heard some people did get, you know, mouthed off. But generally speaking, people live and die by.
Well, do you know why he wasn't allowed up on the podium?
That probably would have brought an uproar.
There would have been booing.
Yeah.
You know, the delegation, the congressional and senatorial and presidential delegation. And some other honored guests led out the bereaved. And I sat there, and that was when I saw that Blankenship was there, Andy. And I kid you not, my stomach turned over, because what I had been thinking was maybe the fact that those dirty bastards weren't there was the beginning of some sort of statewide shunning of that walking human filth.
Nah, not with the way the politicians...
But not... No. Not down here on the plantation. No. We will not ostracize Marse Dawn.
You know, you said something else, too, you know, about the miners and your grandfather being a miner and people who then really fought for having a decent life and being treated decently and weren't afraid to stand up. What has happened?
Well, I really
why are people standing up?
I really can't explain that to you, Andy.
Why aren't they demanding these things? And
like I said, the slavery...
How far do they have to be pushed?
There's no how far anymore. We're so far past that it doesn't matter.
It does look that way. They can kill you, they can murder you in a mine, and still you won't stand up for yourself.
Right, that was one of the things that Blankenship said. No, I think it was Bobby Ray Inman said at the press conference today. He said, well, when you get down to it, this is still just a dangerous business.
No, there's no reason.
Son of a... But the fact of the matter is, I'm not kidding. If you study the history and you know what the coal companies did, they came in and they dispossessed the hillbillies. They used deed forms that sold away. I'm going to give you $500 or maybe $75. And I'm just going to buy the minerals underneath your place and you can live on your house forevermore. And the next thing you know.
Until the coal happens.
Yeah, right. And the next thing you know, they're dispossessed and they're living in coal company housing. And people of Scots-Irish descent, who had been very clannish and very, very off to themselves and very self-sufficient, and like I said, sustainable before sustainable was cool, didn't take lightly to it when they had the chains put on. But you know what? The labor movement came in, the UMWA came in, there was a brutal fight for basic human dignity that very few people remember this, Andy, that the union lost. When we started shooting back at Blair Mountain and got whipped, the labor union movement in West Virginia and Appalachia was dead for a decade and a half. The only thing that revived it was when FDR got into office and the Congress passed and he signed the National Labor Relations Act. And that compelled companies to deal fairly in terms of collective bargaining with working people. That's when that happened. And that whole story is probably a whole program. But that was a matter of marching backwards, because it's not too much longer after that that you get an odious, noxious piece of legislation called Taft-Hartley that essentially tried to gut the NLRA. And then you get up to PATCO and what we were talking about earlier. But at this point in time, because some modest level of human dignity was accorded to people working in this industry, it made the chains sit a little lighter. And after 100 years, it feels like it's been that way forever. The longer a people exist in bondage, the more bondage becomes the normal way of life, if that makes any sort of perverted sense. So that you come to today, and nobody, with very few exceptions, winces when the governor says, we'll get to the bottom of this, we have no idea why it happened. Nobody winces when the president of the United States, with coal only providing 45% of the energy bill in this country, when the president of the United States repeats word for word the advertising slogan of the West Virginia Coal Association, coal keeps the lights on, when he repeats that, very few people wince. And in fact, that entire auditorium, that entire civic center, erupted in cheers, if you recall.
I think it made me scream.
It didn't do me any good.
I know, I was very upset when I heard that. Obama just comes over to me as being such a coward. you know, I'm not going to be able to vote for him again. And, of course, I'm a staunch progressive Democrat my whole life. I've been green for a while, too.
Yeah, well, I know what...
I can't vote for a coward. I can't vote for somebody who has yellow.
Well, but I know what's going to happen to me, Andy. I know what's going to happen to me in 2012. I can predict it like clockwork. Because I've been used this way for years now, and all of us have. Because if, you know, come on. It's just us talking here. If the right wing, God forbid, well, no, please, it may, you know, if the right wing nominates Sarah Palin, you may not have to vote for Barack Obama because they will be appealing to only 20% of the, at best, of the American populace. But if they nominate the guy that I think is still out there sort of floating in the offing, if they nominate Jeb Bush, then it is on. And it's going to be very difficult for anybody, no matter how frustrated they are with Barack Obama, to look at Jeb Bush and say, yeah, we're going to do that again. And run off and vote for Nader or Cynthia McKinney or whomever. And I mean no disrespect to anybody who voted for Nader or Cynthia McKinney. It's going to be very difficult to do that. At least I know it will be from my standpoint. I admired the man for coming down here. I admired most of what he said, Andy. But that, you know, at some point in time, facts have to take precedence. And the fact of the matter is, coal does not keep the lights on. 55% of this country's energy needs are met by something besides coal when it comes to electricity only. And bear in mind that if I said in public at, you know, if I said it at a podium in Beckley or somewhere, or Charleston or somewhere around here, what I just said, my life would be in danger. Because coal is a religion here. And its adherents act with regard to coal the way religious adherents act with regard to received, the same kind of received dogma and doctrine that I was talking with Dave a few minutes ago about.
Right. Did you ever hear of a place called Shippensburg?
Absolutely. Shippensburg State. Isn't there a... Yeah, there's a little...
I'm a graduate from there.
I'll be darned.
So I wasn't too far away from you. In coal country.
Not at all. No, not at all.
So that's where I went. I spent 4 years there. Not much coal in that vicinity. A lot more farming, but...
No, but it's up in PA, and that's what made... That's what made my colleague Rick Smith's question to UMWA President Cecil Roberts so profound. He looked at Mr. Roberts when he was interviewing him up in Pittsburgh and said, "What's up with this mountaintop removal?" He said, "You know, I'm a Pennsylvanian. There's no way on in heaven or earth that we would allow that the mountains to be blown up and our streams to be buried in Pennsylvania. Why are we doing that in central Appalachia?" And for the first time, I heard the single most conciliatory statement I've ever heard come from Cecil Roberts' mouth on mountaintop removal. And that was, he said, "I'm not sure that mountaintop removal is the best way to get coal." Now, if I was president of the UMWA, I'd say we need to end it tomorrow and put people to work mining coal the way you mine coal. Because that's not coal mining. But that was the most conciliatory statement he has ever made with regard to mountaintop removal. And it's true. Pennsylvania wouldn't tolerate it. Tennessee doesn't allow valley fills. You know, North Carolina is blessed insofar as whatever part of the swamp that those Appalachians rose up from didn't have any dead leaf matter in it, so they don't have any coal to get at. You know, neither does Vermont. Neither does New York. But we do. We were cursed with coal, and that's where, and it just happened to be convenient that that's where the expendable Scots-Irish were. Somebody mentioned earlier, Andy, the History Channel special, you know, the story of the U.S. or whatever. I happened to catch something over the weekend called The True Story of Hillbillies, and it was on the History Channel as well.
Right.
And I realized I was in trouble when I realized who it was that was narrating it. That would be Billy Ray Cyrus. And I kid you not, they spent an hour talking about hillbillies making moonshine.
Mm.
And then they spent 30 minutes explaining how the hillbillies built the railroads into Appalachia and happily went to work digging the coal like we were some sort of backwoods Keebler elves. It was sickening. So, you know, the disinformation is out there in volume that you and I can't, we are hard pressed to comprehend. It's a heck of a thing. But if you
kill the character, the messenger, kill the character, kill the whatever dignity somebody has behind them.
But if you ask what it is that will change this toxic culture in this state and in this region, because it's not just West Virginia, it's Western Virginia and it's Eastern Kentucky too, and to a certain extent Northeastern Tennessee. If you ask what's going to make that change, there are some who have given up and say that the change will only come in the hardest possible fashion, and that's when all the coal is played out and the entire region is left to fend for itself again and to hell with everyone, and the coal companies leave with the profits they've made, and we are left sitting in the dust, and we become a ghost town.
Right.
But even then, the coal companies will still own all the land through their land holding companies. Appalachia, for all it's being largely forgotten, Andy, is the single greatest social problem that this country has. And I mean no disrespect to people involved in the immigration rights struggle. I stand shoulder to shoulder with them. Or in civil rights with regard to race issues, I stand shoulder to shoulder with them. But because Appalachia was so forgotten and so ignored and so exploited for so long, it is the single knottiest problem this country faces. Or at least it certainly looks like that from where I stand. Sorry, I didn't mean to monologue on you like that.
Well, I can still remember when Bobby Kennedy used to run through Appalachia and West Virginia, and pictures of him with school kids that were, didn't look all that clean and so forth. But, what's happened to this country as a whole is there's just been such an attack on the middle class and the lower class, and it's just made things so difficult to get ahead. And the Republicans have just been on this bent to just destroy everything that's in the public domain, like the school systems and the libraries that we have. It's just so much more difficult to bootstrap yourself when you don't have the same means. They've just done everything they can to stratify our culture, and that makes it harder for the people that have less, particularly in places like Appalachia. The whole thing from health care to education, it just made life more difficult for people.
Yeah.
Shame.
It is. It is a Andy, that is precisely the word to use. It is
a
shame.
My mother gave me a bill. Showed me a bill the other day. She has dental work on one tooth, and even with her Medicare that she has, it's going to cost her like $2,000 out of pocket. How the heck are you supposed to pay for that? That's
right.
That's absurd. For one tooth, $2,000, and that's with the Medicare covered about half. I mean, where do they get billing you like this?
Well,
that's just insanity. That's what I have looked for.
And that's
when
why
I get older.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that the Bernie Sanders part of the healthcare insurance reform legislation did begin to address is $10 billion, which is going to wind up being spread mighty thin. I recognize that. You do too, I'm sure. But these rural and you know,
the clinics.
Yeah, the clinics are going to feature dentistry.
God, they need to fix that with Medicare. That's the case.
Yeah.
That's insanity. Your teeth are just as valuable as any other part of your body.
Well, your bad teeth can kill you.
Sure.
Because it's almost a straight shot for any infection to the heart.
Right.
We know that. You know, but vision care, foot care, issues of transportation for elderly patients to medical treatment. You know, under 8 years of George W. Bush and 4 years of his daddy and 8 years of Reagan, that was all just destroyed.
Right.
Because they hate it.
They hate working people. Their job is to destroy anything that could support the Democratic Party. Destroy that. Destroy the unions. Particularly go
break,
after teachers.
Break our hearts.
Right.
Make us feel like, well, make us feel like so many of us feel that, you know, that Barack Obama is too tepid for times that are too hard. Break our hearts. Take us away from our activism. You know, I happened to be up late last night and I caught this god awful woman with a voice made for print. She sounds like she gargles razor blades and yet she does radio. And her name is Tammy Bruce, and she calls herself a right-wing, conservative, lesbian, gun-owning feminist. And she sat there talking about, and you know, she just said it open.
Quite a combination there.
Oh, yeah, oh, and I remember one time driving, I was driving home from Alabama, and I heard her on the radio, and I was about ready to run off the road. It was like listening to a train wreck. But one of the things she said is, you know, the right wing has finally caught on, and we are taking the left's organizing tactics, and we are organizing ourselves, and we will be better at it, and we will destroy them. And you know what? I think she was probably right, Andy. Because remember, they're the authoritarians. They do marching orders. Us, we herd cats across parking lots. You know, we juggle snakes.
Well, when you're working 12, 15 hours a day, where can you do activism to keep your family?
Oh, I know.
And living a middle-class life. If you're working this many hours, you can't do the stuff that needs to be done to contribute to the community and contribute to being a citizen. You can't do it when you're working so much. I think that's what they do. They kill you working. They work you to death.
That's the goal. I think you're absolutely right. Andy, wonderful hearing from you, my friend. And I know it wasn't the most joyous conversation, but by God, it covered a lot of ground, and I appreciate it.
It never is with me.
Well, it never is with me. I mean, I'm so sorry. I try to inject a little humor here and there, but sooner or later we all wind up sitting there going, but my God, if we weren't pissed off, Andy, there would be something wrong with us.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Anybody that's aware, that knows what's going on, gee whiz, you've got to be pulling your hair out. It makes me physically sick. It really does. The last years under Bush, I definitely made me physically sick. Made me physically sick seeing what went on. And you see the reality of this. And you see the reaction of our people, and you just go, what has happened to this country? What is happening? Heard the same, I think, Kevin, the last guy, it says the same thing all the time, too. God, what is going on here? Am I losing my mind? Anyway, all right, Bob, it's been a long, long time on the phone, and I know you've been going all blazes with the callers, so great show, and keep it up, man.
Well, thank you very kindly, Andy. You have a great evening.
All right, oh, bye-bye.
Take care now. Bye. And let's see if we've still got one caller left. We do. Hey, welcome to the program.
Sir, it's Lee.
Hey, Lee, what's up, my friend?
Well, I'll start with my usual disclaimer. I mean, just because I slur, it ain't all south. I've had a few pops. But, you know, God damn it, I had stuff ready to go, and then to tell a trade secret, you know, when things go smoother on stage, it's because you've got a set list, so I had things ready, you know, talking points ready to go. And then you guys just continued to stun me, and so when I thought I would dig my way out of it with a, oh, by the way, goddammit, since it wasn't Peter Coyote, which is what all the good liberal documentaries have for a voiceover, I had freaking Billy Ray Cyprus jokes ready to go. Going back to the Hicks thing about let's hunt him down and kill him, you know. But, you know, it just stuns me. And I don't know if you guys touched on it because I got here late and everything else, but you guys were most definitely talking about the, Obama speaking. And I think I found it on Raw Story, and that was the headline that set me off. And like I said, I haven't been home to check and see what he actually said, but I know the prepared speech was all 29 died living the American dream.
Yes.
Did you catch that?
Yes. Yeah, he said that.
Oh. I mean, you just want to, you know, throw up a little bit in the back of your mouth.
Yeah, because, you know, my American dream is to be fried alive in a gassy death trap hole in southern West Virginia. That's the American. You know what? Why don't we just go ahead and haul out George W. Bush to talk about it being uniquely American?
Well, not even the fried alive thing, though. I mean, it's just that such a separation because it's like, you know, my American dream is I'm going to give you every part of my virile youth. You know what I mean? Oh, what's a youth? But I mean, I'm going to give you every bit of my working career. You know, and I've heard Rick Smith talk about it, and you guys do. What is it, 16 people die a day?
Working.
Work related?
Yeah. 3 people from black lung per day.
You know, so it just burns my ass. And oh, by the way, I've got to shout this out. Can I do a real quick food porn thing and I'll get the hell out of it?
Oh, do what you need.
Did you know that Crystal makes an extra hot sauce?
No, I did not. And we don't have crystals up here, and I grieve. We don't have...
You know, for all the other stuff I've never sent you, I'll send that, because it's 55 cents a bottle or something like that. And they also make a kick-ass wing sauce. I experimented with it last weekend.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the two things we don't have in West Virginia that I desperately miss, we don't have Popeyes for chicken, and we don't have and we don't have Crystal for burgers.
Who owns Popeyes?
Popeyes.
Really?
Yeah, they're out of Louisiana.
I'm just thinking about that Mark Morford piece that he wrote about the double.
Oh, the double down.
Yum food. Yeah, one sandwich to kill them all.
I know. And you know, of all the stuff that man writes about so brilliantly, apparently he got more mail about the double down sandwich than he's gotten about the last 12 columns combined.
Oh, right. Things like, hey sickos. Real men marry women, you know, and what was the other one? The thing about the Great Vatican Death Spiral, you know. But, yeah, it's the Yum Foods Corporation stuff that really pissed people off, you know.
Well, you know, you know what a geek I am, Lee. I actually sat down and sent out an email last night to a yogurt manufacturer.
Well, you know, and you...
Because they put high fructose corn syrup in their yogurt. Bastards.
But well, right. But the and it looks like it's in a mason jar. You've had to have seen that other stuff, that Bulgarian yogurt.
No.
It looks like Louisiana Tech colors, light blue and just slightly off red or something like that.
Oh my God, no, I haven't.
But in a
I keep trying
jar.
To save up enough money to order go and get me some Nancy's from Oregon. Because that yogurt is manufactured by the brother of Ken Kesey.
I don't know who that is.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
On the show.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Ken Kesey?
Okay,
the Merry Pranksters?
Nice.
Grateful Dead? Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. You're
yeah, his brother's family.
Right?
Yeah, his brother's family manufactures Nancy's yogurt in Oregon, and I am told it is magnificent.
Well, and by the way, I think she's listening, and I need to do a disclaimer, and I hate doing that kind of crap, but... to Kate, you know, but she's the one that called Big O the empty suit and all that other stuff. And like I said, I got so disgusted with that American dream thing because, you know what, I'm a product of the American dream, and I'm broke as F, and I'm not going into the ground or whatever. But when Gene was talking about the teabaggers, you know, a while back, and he wasn't going to join them, but, I mean, I know Kate wrote that wrote an email going, I heard people wanting to, you know, go join. I didn't want to join them. I just wanted to play the part of the pinball, whatever the hell that thing is in the middle of it, that bounces the ball back in the right direction. You know what I mean? And resend them back to what they should be pissed off at. I mean, hell, you know the stuff from Warner Brothers with the Chicken Hawk, and he's going after Foghorn, and Foghorn goes, "Oh no, boy, what you want's a rooster or a banker," and he points at the dog. You know the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to rechannel those pricks. I would never in a million years sit down over a cup of coffee with them. So just so Kate knows, I mean, I always sound like an idiot on the phone, and well, it's just kind of how it goes. I am a product of the South, sir. You know, so. Hey, by the way, can I go totally off topic? Oh, no.
Lee, you can do anything you want.
Well, since we're talking Teabagger, and I know I dropped it in the freaking chat room, I'll try and, you know, like I said, I've made up cards because, well, you know, everybody knows drummers are stupid. So, you know, like I said, when you've got a set list, the show goes a whole lot smoother. But Werby is the guy that pointed out Teabagger is an acronym. Totally enraged about blacks and gays getting equal rights.
Oh, I love that. I saw that earlier.
I almost ran off the road. So, and beyond that, the only thing I can say, and we should talk about this just for a couple of seconds. I don't know if you have TiVo.
No.
Or how you watch your stuff. But did you go back and flip the TV on and hear with the 25th pick in the draft, the Denver Broncos take Tim Tebow?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We talked about that on Friday.
Did you just sit there and go?
No, I didn't, because I had predicted Denver would take him.
Because they get him close to Colorado Springs?
Bingo, and Colorado Springs is smack dab in the middle of his hustle.
I know, it's been all over. Colorado, I'm 100 pages out from finishing The Family. And I've been wasting my time, you know, actually looking at the citations or whatever in the back of the book. So yeah, I'm real heavily into the Colorado Springs part of the book, if you know what I mean. Starting with Ted Haggard.
Oh. You know? So, yeah, the Crystal Methodist.
Yes, sir.
Meth and Man-Ass.
Here's what I wanted to end it on, and that's something that killed me. As far as going back and looking at Friday's show from Countdown, and who's the number one or the backup QB for Overman, Lawrence something?
Yeah, Lawrence O'Donnell.
He's excellent. I mean,
yeah, he is.
I enjoy him immensely. But did you see where the Pentagon essentially is what's leading the way as far as the green project goes in the United States? They flew their first F-18, half jet fuel, half switchgrass or whatever. They have the largest, the Air Force has the largest solar farm in the U.S. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's a bittersweet story. It's like, goddamn, yeah, lower our carbon footprint. Oh, only so we can be greener before we blow up a village.
Well, right, and it takes me back to what Van Jones said back to a year ago last March at PowerShift in D.C. when he said we have to transition to a green energy structure and a green economy, but we have to couple that with ideas of justice. And then the next line just floored me. He said, otherwise, in the future, we'll be fighting wars over the lithium that powers our lithium battery-powered tanks.
Now, what is he doing these days? Van, sorry.
I think he is a fellow with the Center for American Progress now.
Yeah, and who's behind them?
That's John Podesta's outfit.
Okay, so it's kind of okay.
Think Progress has a lot of good stuff every day. I get tons of good stuff from them.
Okay, well, I'll be all over it. And by the way, like I said, I've been digging like crazy since you guys mentioned that freak former deputy CIA director Bobby Ray Inman, you know, teaching security shit over there at UT.
Yeah, why that? You know, I wonder if the students. Is there a significant enough portion of students at UT to do a boycott or a sit-in or a protest or something demanding that filthy freak be ejected from the premises?
I don't think there are, and at one point I was looking at UT stuff, and the reason I say that is, well, never mind the 365 channels of BS or, you know, whatever that you get, but I remember when they had a thing, and it was kind of a big uproar, and it actually bled over from the student newspaper into the equivalent of what you would call the worthless weekly music rag that, you know, gives you who's playing where every week, and there's, you know, it's a weekly paper that comes out that's not student-oriented, and they talked a little bit about it, a bit about it, and the only reason that UT actually got themselves a black lesbian liberal, you know, try to pigeonhole that down here, by the way. Good luck. But the only reason that you actually got a black lesbian liberal student body president was because the elections took place over fucking spring break. Oh, God, sorry, F word.
No, that's
but
okay.
You know what I mean? I mean, they were all gone. You know, they were down at freaking South Padre, you know, with their Skinner T-shirts and their, you know.
Lou! Party! Yeah.
You know, so, you know. Well, anyway, I got one more, and then I'll go. And I really tried to get Cobwebs going, because I know her ass just caught on fire last time I dropped something about it. But did you see where ex-Monsanto lawyer Clarence Thomas to hear a major Monsanto case?
Never stops.
It's number 09-475. Monsanto's third appeal, and it's let me see, who are the who's the people? Monsanto versus Geerton, Geertson Seed Farms.
Well, this will not end well.
Bon appetit.
That's a clue. All right, Lee, take care, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Bye now. Now, there's a man who knows how to relax a little bit and, have a couple of pops and call the program. Well done, Lee. Let's go back and have a look at the email bag real quick, because we're almost at the end of the program. It was awfully nice to see Guy James pop into the chat room for a moment or two. Came in, went out, gone. He's like magic that way, Guy is. Well, okay, first an announcement. There is a new page up at headonradionetwork.com. John is just telling me about it. John Fox, chief engineer, host of All Foxed Up, all around critical to everything we do here kind of guy. The man who taught me how to understand a mixing board. John tells me there is a new page up at headonradionetwork.com. It is headonradionetwork.com/mobile-streaming. This is important because so far it aggregates two different pieces, one done by John and one done by our blogger Texas Betsy. And they have to do with how you can listen on the go. You don't have to be sitting there next to your computer. Welcome to the advent of what will eventually displace terrestrial over-the-air radio. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, mobile/mobile-streaming. And there are two pieces there. One is listen live on your Android phone. And the other is how to listen on an iPhone on the go. This is important. So kind of bookmark it, and we will try to add other mobile apps as we get our hands on them. I've got one that's an HTC and it runs Windows Mobile whatever. I'll try to see if we can't figure that out too. A couple of emails that have rolled in the interim. Cindy notes, with regard to Andy's call, I can't help agreeing with Andy. Did you realize in the first week in office, Obama deposed two of the hardest-fought, recently won Democratic governors in the USA, Arizona. Janet Napolitano went to Homeland Security, and Arizona reverted back to Republican rule after that blood fight. And in Virginia, Tim Kaine, the first Democratic in Virginia that I ever heard of, a hard-fought battle ripped away by Obama wanting to oust Howard Dean and put a puppet in his place. Tim Kaine actually replaced Mark Warner, who was a Democratic, you know, sort of blue doggy governor. But Cindy asks, I wonder how many activists had their will to fight removed in those states. And she says, I can't vote for Obama again either, and I won't, even if Palin's running. I think I will sit out the vote and let the blue dogs learn a lesson they've long needed to learn. And I understand that sentiment, but it's not the blue dogs who will suffer. With a Palin or a Gingrich or a Jeb Bush or any of those monstrous bastards in office, you know who will pay. We'll pay. Our children will pay. Our grandchildren will pay. Children as yet unborn and undreamt of will pay and pay and pay. Jim sending an email noting, he says, look up the term Stakhanovite, S-T-A-K-H-O-N-O-V-I-T-E, a term glorified by Stalin in reference to those workers in the mines whose lives were lost working under the same conditions, causing the preventable deaths of 29 miners here at Montcoal. Blankenship is another Stalin possessed of the same think state and mindset. And I agree. Kevin noting after the fact, a quote from Shawshank Redemption, they have become institutionalized in regard to the slave mindset that obtains with regard to coal here in Central Appalachia. Kevin says, broken to the point where they don't know what to do with freedom. And a correction coming in from our pal Scott up in Massachusetts. I said 1,000 gallons of oil, of crude oil a day pouring into the Gulf. I was, of course, shamefully wrong. That's 1,000 barrels. 1,000 barrels, which equates to 42,000 gallons of crude per day from that Gulf oil rig. And it will wash up in Louisiana's bayous. It will wash up on the exquisite white sand beaches that I so adore of the northern Gulf Coast in what we lovingly refer to as the Redneck Riviera or Lower Alabama, L.A. And as Scott notes, spill, baby, spill. Kill, baby. Kill. And if they can't get underwater robots to stop the outpouring of crude in the next, I think, 72 hours was what I read, they will have to drill another well to draw off the pressure or some such. I'm no engineer. And that will take weeks. Now do the math. 42,000 gallons of crude pouring into the Gulf, possibly for weeks. Yeah, spill, baby, spill. How's that whole drill, baby, thrill thing working out for you, Mussolini? She has been quite quiet on the issue, hasn't she? This rolling in from our friend Jude, also in the Great Northwest. She says, great dialogue between you and Jim, plus many others today, especially the reference to Helen Keller. The irony we now face is that those who claim to have eyes to see and ears to hear are the exact ones who are blinded and deaf. With the extraordinary lies and lack of independent research has led all of us to a dangerous place where we find ourselves standing on a thin precipice. In our exchange regarding references to the universe with all its indescribable power and awesome might, it holds the balance of the magnificent. Wisdom is required to discern the many complex issues facing us. Yet for far too many, it has been reduced to one-liners and talking points. It is maddening to be exposed to this insanity, but we have no choice other than to know exactly what is occurring. With reference to the life of Helen Keller and through her journey of difficult discovery, the invisible was held and expanded upon with the delicate fabric of critical thought. She was one who was able to assimilate from the vastness of the void an understanding with such expansiveness and clarity. As for eyes to see and ears to hear, I'll stand with those who have struggled in ways I cannot comprehend. They stood and stand in truth and perseverance. These decisions define exactly who we are, and together this is our conscious fabric, weaving our strength. Beautifully put, and truly too. And having mentioned Helen Keller, I want to share something with you. She wrote, when the United States Supreme Court upheld the conviction of Eugene Victor Debs, she wrote to him on May the 17th, 1919. And in the midst of her letter to Eugene V. Debs, Helen Keller said, "Behold what is happening all over the world today. Oh, where is the swift vengeance of Jehovah that it does not fall upon the hosts of those who are marshaling machine guns against hunger-stricken people? It is the complacency of madness to call such acts preserving law and order. Law and order! What oceans of blood and tears are shed in their name! I have come to loathe traditions and institutions that take away the rights of the poor and protect the wicked against judgment. The wise fools who sit in the high places of justice fail to see that in revolutionary times like the present, vital issues are settled not by statutes, decrees, and authorities, but in spite of them. Like the Girondins of France, they imagine that force can check the onrush of revolution. Thus they sow the wind, and unto them shall be the harvest of the whirlwind." And the question, of course, is whether or not that change that is described as revolution can ever be manifested in this corporatized world, or whether we, as guardians of the light, must simply stand our ground, struggle not to be extinguished, serve as repositories of decency and justice and mercy. And like those tribal peoples that I mentioned earlier in the program, pass it down to a next generation and say, guard it well. Hold it near and dear to your heart. And wait for the day when you can plant the seed, and the seed can blossom again. So that's the program for tonight. Thank you very kindly for joining in. Thank you very much to those of you who kindly contributed over the weekend to help us meet our monthly fundraising goal. It is badly needed. The bills constantly come due, and we do what we can to keep things going here. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. Thank you so very much to all of you who keep this going, and to those of you whose good intentions serve as a bulwark and a foundation upon which we can keep moving forward. Thank you to everyone behind microphones and not behind microphones who makes this go, from Sue, who is the our webmistress and then mother to the chat room, to Lottie, to our news ninjas Gene and Susan, to our blogger Texas Betsy, our Southeast correspondent Matt Osborne, Osborne Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. My head writer, David in Tennessee. to Peter Godbold, to John Fox, and to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you all. None of this happens without the combined efforts of every single one. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, who do stand up and do continue to speak truth to power, even in these hardest and most painful of times. CRMW.net and CoalRiverWind.org. There is a vision of a future there that they have done so much to enunciate, and that they too guard until the day when the seed can finally, safely be planted. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Heroes, this is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. And, you know, I got to tell you, I'm not a big fan of offshore drilling anyway. I wasn't thrilled when President Obama said we were going to give it a shot, but I understood it. Fortunately, he's turned around and said, you know what, we're going to freeze this. We're going to take a look at things. But what bothers me is BP, just like the Bush administration, had no plan in the event of this inevitable and now devastating event. You got to understand, this explosion happened on this well. It is this oil is coming out of the ground 5,000 feet below the surface. You're talking major, major economic and environmental disaster here. And you think about it, who's going to pay this? Who's going to pay for it? You and I are going to pay for it. And, of course, the right wing are already starting. They're already saying, well, you know, Obama and his offshore drilling. We really, you know, get ready for this. Get ready for this. Because this is where the right's going to go. Well, Obama wanted offshore drilling. And this is what happens when Obama wants offshore drilling. I'm telling you, this is coming. Mike Papantonio, he's an environmental lawyer. He was on the Ed Show the other night. He claims that an acoustic switch could have prevented this disaster. According to him, this switch, this fail-safe, shuts the flow of oil off at the source. And here's the thing. It only cost $500,000 each. But that would take away from CEO bonuses. That would take away from the $16 million they spent last year on lobbying. But what bothers me, these switches, this acoustic switch, this fail-safe, this thing that could have prevented this economic disaster, this environmental disaster, is required on every offshore drilling platform in the world, except for right here in the U.S. And you ask the question, why? Why is that the case? Well, this is deregulation, American style. And if you go back and you remember during the first Bush administration, during the first term Bush was in office, I was screaming about it. Everybody who cared was screaming about it, Jake. All those secret meetings that Cheney had, all the secret meetings where they were dividing up Iraq and they were dividing up the oil fields, all those secret meetings with Enron that we're not allowed to know about, this is what came out of it.
The economic impact, and the average person doesn't understand this, is not just about the cost of cleanup. It's not just about those people who work in the industry perhaps being out of jobs. It's not just about fines. It's about local industries.
Forrest Gump.
Fishermen.
Yep.
Shrimp. Yes, exactly.
Forrest Gump.
An interview on national television, and this guy said, look, he said, depending on how bad this is, we could lose our businesses. So the economic impact is huge, far beyond just the cost of cleaning it up. And you're right.
Especially for an area that's already been devastated.
Absolutely. They used the example, as a classic example, Norway, like every other country. Norway has a lot of fishermen. They understand that concept. Like you said, what is the amount, I think you said $500,000? That is minuscule in the terms of the value of these companies.
Yep.
I mean, it just the unmitigated greed, and again, just like in the economic crisis with the bankers and the hedge funds, who ultimately pays? You and I pay.
Exactly. And we're going to be spending nearly $3 billion more on gasoline prices. We, the taxpayers, are going to be spending billions of dollars in tax subsidies to big oil companies. And we've been giving them billions of dollars for years. They're saying it's going to cost us about $3 billion this year in lost revenue. This year alone. Nearly $20 billion over the next five, according to Think Progress blog. So we're going to pay for this stuff. And, you know, I look at this and I ask the question, do you think we should be pursuing clean, renewable energy sources now? Do you think now is the time where we should start talking about, you know what, maybe offshore drilling isn't the answer? And I got to tell you, BP, they're no corporate saint here. You know, the radical right wants you to believe, oh, well, they're the good benevolent corporation. They bring us energy and they're such a good environmentally. I see the Shell commercials on TV where the woman says, oh, we're environmentally conscious. We care. They spent $16 million last year on lobbying. They're doing business with Iran. You think they care about this country? No. They care about profit. They're like any corporation. They care about the bottom line. So stop with the benevolent corporation nonsense. And the other part of this, and think about this for a second, with Workers Memorial having just passed, 11 workers were killed on this platform. You add these 11 workers to the 29 killed at Massey Energy's Upper Big Branch mine, the two miners killed in the Ducote mine in Kentucky this past week, a mine that was cited 11 times for roof falls, 19 times for falling debris. This was an accident waiting to happen. Another non-union mine. This was an accident waiting to happen. Explosions at, you know, several refineries across country killed more workers, and the numbers keep piling up. We're seeing, this is the result, folks. This is the result of 30 years of anti-government, anti-regulation, anti-worker policies, and the Grover Norquists of the world, they're going to give it to you. They're going to tell you exactly, straight out, exactly what their plan is.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
I mean, I don't know, how much more honest can you be? This is the result. And you look at the AFL-CIO's 19th annual workplace safety report that just came out. It's called Death on the Job, and you can Google Death on the Job. In 2008, they're saying 5,214 workers were killed on the job this year. Another